Feeling a little run down by the Discourse and Rider fandom? Looking for something fresh to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Well, look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX. Active ingredients. Gomez Q.
Because everything I hate, I do say it should be better, and it would be nice if I don't just say...
Illustrator Clay.
Fire!
MC Pez. I am the child of the sun of my grandpa. Side effects may include hasiitis, show a fever, helper robotophobia, and an English slope. This is the cure for the Kamen Rider Show. Dose as needed. Welcome to this episode on Kamen Cast RX. Nago is the worst. Are you guys ready for my intense summary?
Yes.
Like the days of old?
You love summaries, don't you?
Yep, I sure do. Here we go. This is the summary for Kamen Rider Kiva episode 7 through 14. And I guess we'll be doing total spoilers, but not because we're not going to go into exhaustive detail. But anyway, watch the show. It's good. You'll thank us later. So this is it, guys. Wataru forms the resolve to stand up on his own and face his challenges more directly. That's it.
Hey, he's getting good.
But there's so much more than that, really. But that thread carries through these, what, 8 episodes? Mm. Or is it 6? I don't know. I can't count right now.
Okay.
Anyway, that thread carries through all this, and it's really solid. And I have a little list here of Kiva's successes that I'm going to throw out, because
yeah.
I like to talk for a long time.
And no one's
stepping up to interrupt me. This show has research that matters. The Ixa system is tweaked and worked on and developed, and the combat that the users engage in while wearing it actually has an effect on what happens to it later on.
And interestingly
go ahead.
There's not too many anyone that I can recall in the background saying, what excellent data I'm getting. No, interesting. What interesting data.
Well, Shima does say that they got good data from Jiro's use.
But you
mixer, but it's just a passing comment.
But it's more, I don't know why it is, but it feels more relevant,
yeah,
I think, as Matt has kind of hinted at.
Possibly because that is just a throwaway line in a scene about something else.
Possibly Kashima's a goodie. But yeah, it doesn't, it's
maybe.
It's not, you know,
they're just chatting in
what
chat.
Fascinating data. And leaving the audience thinking, well, evidently most of the audience is fine with that, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to be, you know, the angry minority again. I hate interesting data. It's one of my least favourite cliches. And, I just think it's lazy. So I like, though, that, like you said, the data, the research, in inverted commas, does kind of pay off, because you actually see Ixa develop as a technology between the two time periods. You'll notice, well, I don't know, have you noticed the punching finisher that Ixa uses in the 80s sequences doesn't use it in the 2000 stuff?
Yeah, I did notice that. Another thing I noticed is just a simple aesthetic is the helmet is different, and I don't know if that's a...
It's not different, it's just that, well, Ixa's starting form is called save mode, and that's when the helmet's closed up.
Okay.
And it doesn't, it's like a safe defensive form, like, you know, the bulky masked form in Kabuto. And it doesn't,
gotcha.
It doesn't start opening up and using the more dangerous and powerful burst mode until, you know, 20 years down the line when they've finished the research. So it's simple, they don't put it in your face much, but you can figure it out just from that.
I love time skips.
Yeah.
And they're done so effectively, too. Because I get this... I mean, not only do we not see Nago suffering the ill effects of the Ixa system that Jiro and Otoya... sorry, I'm so happy. I was so happy when he transformed that Otoya feel. There's just the quick aesthetic difference in it, and it's obvious, and it doesn't need to be explained. It's kind of clear that it's more powerful, and especially when you get the further context that Shima tells Nago that it can be even more powerful, which I was disappointed to see it was some stupid crane dinosaur thing, and it's like, that's going to make Ixa more powerful?
Claire,
really?
Rewatching
that,
it.
That doesn't work.
Yeah, and he says, I've got something that may make it more powerful than Kiva, and of course everyone's like, oh, and I turn to her and go, oh, that's the digger thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just like an actual child's toy. And he's
not
like,
as cool as it sounds.
You can imagine him rolling out, like, face me now, king of the vampires.
It's not you're more powerful, is it?
Yeah, quick, but make it quick, because I'm running out of D batteries.
Yeah, it looked really ridiculous, and I think, I mean, they did a fairly good job playing it straight-faced, but it was like, it could have been, hold on. It should have been like a, it could have been a Tonka thing, and it would have still worked.
Yeah. And it
like,
was a
oh
very
yeah,
small,
there's our big upgrade.
It was a very small element, I think, and wisely they don't like hang on it for very long.
Yeah, I've heard rumor that Inoue works around like the motorcycle upgrade thing too, and like we never really see that again.
I don't remember
that Kiva uses.
Yeah. I don't remember Bronn coming into it
maybe once or twice
like ever again, but maybe. Yeah, which is fine. I don't know. Maybe it's just...
That's what I would do.
I'm sure there's a good reason for it, but I'll be honest, I haven't thought about it. Why I have such a problem with the way the upgrades and stuff is used in Gaim, and most not in Kiva. I'm just not as annoyed by it. I don't know. I think it's a bit more pervasive in Gaim. Because, you know, Jinba Lemon turns up quite a lot. Whereas the, whatever it's called, the Ixa Digger... It just doesn't intrude on the narrative for me at all.
Well, it has been how many episodes? Without upgrades.
Oh right, yeah, of course, sure. 12 or something, yeah.
So it does actually seem like an event and potentially a change.
Yeah, which should be interesting to see play out. I noticed. I guess since we're let's subdivide and let's just go through bit by bit. So like on research, or jumping off of research a little bit, it's interesting that the Ixa system was built by Yuri's mom, which... wow.
Sounds like there's some life going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Life. Whew. I'd be interested to hear more about how the Ixa system was developed and where Yuri's mom got the information for it, especially because it seems like it mirrors the Kiva system or belt so much, like the little chip or whatever that he sticks into the left side of the Ixa driver or whatever it's called, Ixa belt. It's like the fusils. It's very similar, and I think we see in the future that Nago has more than just the one. So it seems like it's definitely an imitation of Kiva's powers, but that's just a, I don't know, a subtle little mystery or whatever. I'm waiting to find out.
If I may, Fwessels.
Fwessels, yeah. Alright, thank you.
Alright.
Would you like to explain the joke to the listeners?
No, it's rubbish. I think it's one of the silliest things in Kiva. Fwe is the Japanese word for whistle. So it's a contraction of two words for whistle.
It's a whistle.
And it is a whistle. Yeah, it's rubbish.
And famously, that was played on a little bit with Fueki in Wizard, because he had like a flute sword thing.
Famously.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah. Okay, so basically there was a character in a thing called Mr. Sword, and he uses a sword. Writing.
Basically,
I love
yeah.
it. I love it. I love the little things that we can get fixated on like that. Like, oh, this makes it good.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Fwessels it down.
I think it's neat that the Shima Foundation is different to the Miraculous. Is it Miraculous?
Wonderful,
Thursday
I would say. I would say
yeah, wonderful.
I would say wonderful. I don't know. It could be magnificent.
Well, they do say Tsubarashi in the Japanese, but I don't know how many translations that can have.
Well, whichever it is.
Yeah.
I like that they are separate but mutually beneficial, apparently, entities. Like, Shima is so mysterious. He has a foundation, and he has this monster hunting group that seems so tiny. It seems to be like four people, but, you know, it must be, kind of must be
20.
More.
I should have brought this up earlier, but what do you mean by the, like, Shima Foundation? Where are you getting this from?
In the flashback.
Yeah, in the flashback. Yuri's mother worked there. It's on the sign when she goes into the building, yeah.
I don't remember at all. The way I view Shima is just, like, an independently wealthy guy who just kind of very cleverly plugs his money into things. Doesn't really have a fixed job, not even necessarily a fixed abode, just kind of a cool, older philanthropist.
And did so, the yeah, Fangire kill his parents?
I don't know. Maybe Fangire were his parents. I don't know. But but he clearly, I think, has his fingers in a lot of pies. I like to imagine he's got hundreds of different companies and just little ones doing all different work, you know, and he hires out, like, he outsources all the time, doesn't stay in one place too long. Yeah, I like him. He is mysterious. And you kind of, I don't know, am I alone in this? You know he's good.
Sure.
You don't.
Oh yeah,
you don't
definitely.
Think this guy is going to turn out to be a heel.
No.
Right. Like,
he's not even like the, I guess, stereotypical jerk, central commander of the thing who knows what's really going on but refuses to tell anyone. Like, I don't get any of that sense at all from him. Mm. I know he withholds a little bit of information. It was interesting that that happened with Jiro, or rather with Yuri, and, you know, giving Ixa to Jiro instead, because he needed to protect her from the, you know, the draining or taxing elements of the Ixa system, but it wasn't malicious. And actually, that kind of brings me to a common Inoue complaint that people lobby against him, which is that everything could be solved if people just sat down and had a conversation for 5 minutes. And
wow.
I would... Well, hold on. I'm presenting the contrary point.
Good.
That the... I think somebody who holds that opinion would point to Kiva and say, in this stretch of episodes specifically, that Yuri was... Shima should have just told her straight up what was up with the Ixa system being incomplete and being damaging, and it would have removed all that drama. So that's one thing. And then another thing is they would have said the whole Nago Wataru thing, like, oh, yeah, they should have just talked. But Nago's a completely unreasonable person. He doesn't even feel bad after he's beating that car thief.
Yeah.
As my mom would say... Then there wouldn't be a story.
Sometimes.
What do you mean?
If they talk to each other.
No, I understand.
Okay. But my main problem with this is, like, this, I don't know. Sometimes, like, I think it's a shame how we can only compare Kamen Rider to other Kamen Rider. First of all, I don't really buy this talking about writers. The discourse around, like, writers on Toku. Like, I don't really, I haven't really researched either way. But, like, I just can't imagine that one person is responsible for writing these scripts. That's not generally how these long-running television shows work. He might be appointed head writer for the purposes of the credits, fair enough. But I think saying Inoue does this, Inoue does that is daft and useless, especially with something like If Only the Characters Talked. My goodness, much fiction relies on that?
I'll give some examples in a minute.
What? You don't need any.
No, but you do.
Shakespeare to J.K. Rowling.
The example with Shima, then, telling or not telling Yuri that about, you know, it feels dangerous and such, that would be out of character, and it wouldn't reach her anyway.
Hmm.
Shima is not a man who, like, chases people. He sits there, he waits for you to come to him. He would have had to shout Yuri down. He wouldn't do that. That's not the kind of person that he is. That's not bad writing. That's establishing a character.
And then sticking with it.
I wouldn't like him as much if he did that.
We had a comment on the last Kiva episode from Kamen Rider Dragon, who I can't find elsewhere. They didn't have a link or anything.
Dragon Knight?
Well, maybe. Well, they said, his show gets a bad rap because of his writing style. This is Inoue. I think they work on some of his shows, like Agito and Jetman, and get pretty bad in Fies and Kiba. And I've heard it a lot, Inoue this, Inoue that. And I asked, what is his writing style? Like, I'm open to hearing what it is that's bad, because the series sure isn't perfect and takes some questionable routes, but I'm not hearing anywhere I look what it is that's bad about
people
this Inoue style. And they did reply, which I appreciate. I admit that it's hard to describe. You just kind of know it's him. For example, a common trait I see of over-dramatic characters, are characters that don't talk to each other. They often have these dramatic plot lines where characters misunderstand each other and all they have to do is talk. And in bad writing, that can be very irritating. But think about gothic fiction, which Kiva is. Catherine's dad brings Heathcliff home. He doesn't say, hey, this is my bastard child.
Whoa, spoilers.
So Kathy and Heathcliff get really crazy over each other, don't understand the emotions that they have and the connection that they have, and they ruin their lives.
The book wouldn't exist
if he did say, hey, this is your brother.
Claire is talking about the song Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush.
Yes. or Jane Eyre by a different Bronte, I think. Actually, not sure.
Wow.
Jane starts to fall in love with Rochester. Rochester starts to fall in love with Jane. If he was just like, hey, by the way, I've got a mad wife. She's in the attic.
It wouldn't be any good then, would it?
You need to see the characters unfurl themselves and get to a point where they can talk to each other. Like, that really is perfectly exhibited in this show, because Wataru is learning how to talk to people.
Everyone wants...
on the large scale and the small scale.
Everyone wants the Iron Man movie, you know? The end of the Iron Man movie. And I saw that, and it takes a lot to convince me to watch, like, a superhero movie. And I watched it, and I thought, hey, yeah, that is original and daring. And then I watched the second movie, and I stopped watching after 20 minutes, because they didn't build on it at all. You can do that. You can make it exciting and different by saying, oh, you know what, we're going to usurp everyone's expectations. We're going to have the characters actually talk openly with each other. But you've got to do something with it.
Mm.
Like, what would happen in Kiva? Naga, by the way, I'm Kiva. I'm also completely out of character right now. Cha-ching. And then Naga was like, oh, wow, that makes things a lot easier for me, because now I'm going to kill you. And then he does a murder, and the police take him away, and he says, I'm Naga! And
yay.
That's the end of the show? Like, think about it. Think about where yay. It would go from there. I don't know.
I was going to bag on people who want that sort of thing to happen, but I'm not going to.
I'm sure some people might prefer, like, I don't know, maybe there's something else you can replace it with. Maybe there's something else you can replace that drama with. But in a melodrama that explicitly paints itself as gothic-coded, I'm definitely not going to complain about dramatic irony. I expect it.
And I mean, think back to the first Kamen Rider series.
Mm.
Hongo, Tachibana, you should tell her you didn't murder her dad.
Yeah.
No, I can't, because of reasons.
You know, he wrote that.
Yeah.
No, I'm curious, honestly, like, listeners... When did this trend start for people saying, this writer?
Yeah, I really want to know where it comes from. What is the source of Inoue does this and
for me,
we have this opinion?
For me, not even necessarily Inoue, just the overall trend. Because as we've mentioned a couple of times in earlier episodes, I'm more of a Showa fan than I am a Heisei fan. In discourse about Showa series, I've never heard anyone say, oh, well, you know, that writer. Never. It only happens with Heisei series. And in fact, I think it only happens... with, I don't even think it happened with Kuga. I don't remember. It only happens with Agito onwards. Suddenly it's like, oh, well, this writer. Is it an Inoue thing? Do people just need a name to latch onto to discuss, to hate or to love?
I think it's possible. It's a very compelling idea that you know who is doing this.
Right.
And you can think about it in personal terms.
Because you can say, like, this Dickensian ending. And you could say, this Inoue-esque... river. This river sequence is classic in a way. Classic in a way. He's only been writing for 8 weeks. He's still a baby.
He has been writing for quite a long
time. I know. But I mean, that bears out even more. Like, he's been involved at different levels of the writing process in this massive genre for so long. I just can't believe that people can pin this guy down and say, oh, he writes this kind of story.
I would really like to hear about
sure.
it. Like, I want to read that. I want, if you have the opinion that Inoue does whatever, and whether you think it's good or bad, like, please try
some critical analysis and
write down what exactly he does, examples, why you like or dislike that. Because I'm not setting homework or anything. Please give it to me.
It's the bare minimum you expect, isn't it? When someone has an opinion on a creative work, when someone has an opinion on a story, you want to be able to say, well, you know, if they're not like a kid who's just loving it because it's the thing they love, you want to be able to say, well, what is it about it?
It's not even that I necessarily expect it. I just want it.
Yeah.
That's fun for me reading that.
Right.
Well, you're having a conversation about the thing.
Right.
And it makes it enriches. Like, this show wouldn't be as good as it is if I wasn't talking to you guys about it and having the extra experience. Like,
exactly.
I'm not done, I watch, however many hours, about 7 hours, a little less than that, of Kiva, but, like, I've had more time and experience with the characters and with the show than just that limited time watching, because I've been thinking about it.
Yeah.
And, it's, I don't know, maybe for some people it's not as fun to have a prolonged conversation about it and really get into it, sink their teeth into it, so to speak.
But why are they listening to us?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Like they're daring to give it a try and then being massively disappointed. That's a great point there. Because another of my kind of gripes with like media analysis is whenever someone will say, I just watched this thing to be entertained. And one thing I'm realizing as I rewatch Kiva, especially having seen Gaim so recently, Gaim didn't entertain me anywhere near the way Kiva does. And it's because it's a better written show. It's not because it's stupider. Like, I'm really sick of the argument that This show doesn't take itself seriously, and it's not complex, and it doesn't think. It's just fun. No, Gaim isn't fun. Stupid isn't fun. Gaim was fun. It was amazingly fun for the first few episodes, but then it got stupid, and it stopped being fun.
But Kiva is keeping it really top.
Well, it has. There's so much going on at once, and there's so much ambition in the writing. There's so many clear goals set up, and there's so many actually compelling mysteries that most of which actually get paid off, that's entertaining. Like, I mean, again, to bring my mother up, she's a great advocate of switching your brain off. But, okay, not to diss, like, my generation, but my mum actually had to work her ass off her whole life. And when my mum says it, it's like, oh, okay, you probably do have to watch Dancing with the Stars on Ice off a diving board celebrity edition, because otherwise you might genuinely get sick.
Well, she spends her time engaging children.
Yeah, well,
trying
sure.
to encourage the thinking process.
And I just don't see that when someone says, when I watch Super Sentai, I just want to chill out after a hard day working a normal 9-to-5 job. Maybe everybody out there gets their ass kicked by life as much as my mum does. It's not really my place to say that. I apologize for even going down that route. But it irks me because you go out of your way to find these shows. They're not, you do have to go and look for them and download them and listen to a foreign language. Surely you're setting yourself a challenge already. Surely you want to be stimulated. But what I love about Kiva is that it does. It is funny. It's dramatic.
So funny.
It is funny.
And
it's great.
It's succeeding even in a rewatch. And I hate rewatching stuff where Gaim failed.
This is my third time.
On a first viewing. So there you go. Entertainment.
Okay. I'm sure part of the reason it is so entertaining is because of the complex characters.
I set up these segues for him. I go on actual rants. Bring my family members into an argument so he can have a smooth segue. And he is... throws it out the window.
Once again, you're not supposed to point it out. You're lampshading the,
You flipping lampshaded the lampshade. You're a huge chandelier, and each light has a tiny lampshade on it.
On with the show.
Hey, that sounds cool. Never mind. I think that you might find that in an Iranian house. Just saying. And that's not racist. That's based on experience. Anyway. So this show does have complex characters, but what I've done, similar to how the writing of each episode is fairly complex and everything, is I went ahead and, similarly to how I boiled down the whole 7 through 14 episodes in one sentence, I have very short sentences for a few of our modern characters.
Yeah.
Humility is a key thing, and Watu has that in spades, whereas Nago doesn't. He is all... pomp and arrogance. And
he is Nago.
Yeah. His best line.
Yeah. Exactly.
I am Nago.
So funny, I could die.
He doesn't even use his full name.
Amazing.
He assumes the police know who he is.
But we haven't got
that yet. No, we haven't. But that is a great character moment.
Jump into it. That's what we want to discuss here, is characters.
Claire's favorite character in the whole thing. So I
can't believe that. I cannot believe that. I forgot to mention my distillation of all the characters into their things. Mm. So just real quick, I only did Nago, Megumi, and Wataru because everybody else is a little too complex or hasn't had enough time dedicated to them. But in short, Nago is a demon, Megumi is a goddess, and Wataru is becoming a man. So we can go ahead and jump back into Nago and
theology into there somewhere. Yeah, the specialty area there. But why is Nago a demon, Claire?
Because he's just the worst, isn't he?
He's
so good at being awful.
He's the lowest human being in Kiva.
He really is.
A contender in Rider history, from what I've seen.
Yeah. I was really pleased. I've said a number of times, but the listeners weren't there.
No.
When we've been watching this new batch of episodes, I'm so pleased that you mentioned that Naga can be read as, like, a different version of Tendo. Because it makes him even funnier.
I can't believe you didn't notice it.
My default perception comes from completely different places.
I hope someone writes in and says, yes, actually, Inoue does write all of these things by himself. So I can say, Inoue is
a genius
for following Kabuto with this character. Because it's got to be on purpose.
Every time he enters the scene, like...
He ruins it!
I go, oh, this guy, go away! Go away! And it's so good that I am. Because it shows how important he is in... changing things and in making things happen and in, like, making the story be.
He's Negafons.
Yeah, he is.
He comes in, the audience does not applaud, there is no theme music, they boo, but he actually has an effect on the plot.
Oh, he's just such a... he's the worst. He has no self-awareness at all.
He's the opposite of what we're talking about.
He has a completely false perception of himself and his place in the world and his abilities and just of the world in general. He's awful. He's petty and... I didn't even know.
That's why he belongs in the show.
Yeah.
Because he's an embodiment of selfishness and self-absorption, whereas... We do have headphones in. Nago is an embodiment of selfishness and self-absorption, whereas Wataru is more of a... Well, I wouldn't say...
An embodiment of humility?
It's hard to say that Wataru is selfless, but he doesn't have any awareness of himself as a human being for, like, the first quarter of the show. It takes a number of different things to make him aware of his own power. And when When I say power, I just mean... the fact that he's a person and that he can influence others and the fact that he can be himself, that's something he's very scared of. Nago thinks he knows who Nago Keisuke is.
He thinks he's like this benevolent god.
Yeah, exactly. I'd really like to hear Matt's opinions on this specifically because I ragged on...
He is Lucifer.
Pardon?
How? Oh, because he's an angel and he's light and white-colored. Yeah,
And he's like... I think I know the best that my opinion should be acknowledged.
Well, of course, that's brilliant because... Okay, hang on. Is the movie spoilers? Can I discuss? Because it doesn't affect the series.
I think it is spoilers, no.
Okay, no spoilers, Matt. Nago used to be a member of a different organization. Okay, this isn't a spoiler, I swear to you, because it doesn't matter in the end. It's revealed in the movie and it only matters in the movie.
Yeah, it's not even necessarily canon.
And that backs up what you're saying. Because you know that he left it because of a dispute with a superior. Because he thought he knew better. He was cast out of heaven.
That's great. No, I mean, that's absolutely correct. Go ahead, continue.
I'm fascinated with Matt's opinion on this you know what?
I mean, he even, like, directly defied his dad.
Yeah, I ragged on the sort of Kamen Rider Wiki theory of, like, oh, he is based on a crusader. Like, he isn't. He's very much... coded with a Japanese perception, like the popular Japanese perception of Christianity.
European Christianity.
Yeah, with that, like, you know, thou shalt have no god but me, and it's like, ooh, isn't that scary? And aren't demons cool? Which is still, unfortunately, kind of a new thing in the West, and I wish we'd get over it. No, demons aren't cool, the point is they're bad.
Oh, wait, but I thought Hail Satan, because he's all cool with, like, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, and he wears, like, a leather jacket. Yeah. I love the phrase devil's advocate. Satan. Why are you advocating the devil? He's the bad guy.
Well, I mean, there's Satanism, Satan, and then there's Satan, and then there's demons, which are different.
Right.
Yeah, Anton LaVey, get the hell out of here. No, but I was... Like I said, Nago is a reflection of that kind of... I can't even think of a good point of reference, because, like, I don't watch enough, like, anime, or... the first thing that comes to mind is Castlevania, where, like... if there's a Christian character in a Japanese game, they're always going to carry a giant cross on their back, be mental.
European Christian.
Think that they're like, they've got a private line with God and everyone else is unworthy. It's like the greatest overemphasis of Christian faith you can imagine. It's funny because imagine the amount of racist depictions of the bead-shaking Buddhist Japanese in Western fiction. It's exactly the same. It's just a negative stereotype.
I don't know how much missionary noise there was from European Christianity to Japan. Like, maybe it's just a reaction to, like,
what, low? Wow.
Stop your noise.
The Meiji Restoration. Loads.
Yeah.
I
was going to say, I thought it was pretty bad.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, like, fire and brimstone, like literal fire, not literal brimstone. Yeah, oh.
There we are, because I mean...
Hey, if you want to know about Christianity in Japan, folks, look at Meiji period. It's crazy stuff.
I don't know that Buddhists and Shinto types do that much conversion.
It's not... Well, yeah, Christianity does have that reputation for the missionaries, sure. So, hey, I mean, you almost, I suppose what you're arguing, and forgive me for putting it so bluntly, but that Japan has a good reason to portray Christians in this way, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people probably do.
Yeah, well, I'm of the camp that's very bored of anti-Christian rhetoric.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm bored of anti-religious rhetoric, in general.
Oh, hey, wait, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I do not follow Richard Dawkins on Twitter. And I basically, it's one of those moments when you realize it's one of those life makers. Think of all my religious friends. Think of all my atheist friends. Which ones are actually tiring? It's the atheists. Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, hey, generalizing for funds. But it's really gotten tiring for me, this assumption that religion turns people into, you know, dictators and nut jobs and conquerors. And so I never really see Nago's character as religious because it's too unpleasant for me. But
I don't see him as religious, okay, just because it didn't really occur to me that he was that sort of character. Because we're dealing with vampires.
There is a vampire slayer. Yeah.
Like, it's likely that there's going to be some sort of crosses will kill them.
I think it's the vaguest.
Some sort of aesthetic Christianity.
That's what,
so I
that's
didn't read
thing.
It as like he is no. a Christian.
He it's says
just, he uses these motifs.
He says, "Return your life to God."
He does
when he kills the fangirl. But that's it,
I
isn't
feel
it?
Feel like he means it.
And the cross, the Ixahension sequence, the cross.
He means himself.
It's a highly stylized cross, and it's mostly a sun pattern, isn't it? It's very elusive. Yeah. Which I think, yeah, you're right. It's fine. I never think of him as like a religious cipher. He's a vampire hunter cipher.
I think that he is using God in the way that really freakish murderers use the devil.
Okay, I am the Lizard King kind of thing. He doesn't...
Like, I'm stealing this directly from Criminal Minds.
Okay.
But,
there's... Yeah, drawing what you know.
There's this one episode with a cannibal.
Criminal Minds!
And...
Hey!
And he's all...
Is he a D&D
the devil
player?
Of the devil, blah, blah, blah.
Or a furry or something.
But when they discuss him... When they discuss him psychologically, they say... and I believe this is, you know, from real life, real profiling, real psychological whatevers. That he doesn't actually believe in the devil. He uses belief in the devil to justify his actions, his compulsions.
Yeah.
And I think Nago is the same. I don't think he's really pious. We never see him in a church.
We never see him
really engaging with religion. But he uses the trappings to prove his power and to legitimize his power.
He smacks Megumi around a lot, so maybe he's trying to be like super old school, you know?
Maybe.
I hate to use the word twice, but yeah, like... The best way to put it, I think, is that he uses the rhetoric of Christianity. He uses the spiel. Like, he come in and say, "Return thy life to God, I am the holy event." But he doesn't know what he's saying. It's just generic sort of discourse, you know, where you just sort of take the basics of a religion and, you know, play around with them, show no actual respect for or interest in the source material.
The scenes with
Pez would know about because he does a heck of a lot of research into religious stuff for his projects, and just sometimes for fun, from what I've seen. And yeah, I don't think they put much thought into it. I don't think it suffers for it as much as some series do. I just think it's a fun, like, Hammer horror kind of thing, rather than a religious thing.
The scene with his father supports that as well, I think, because when he's like, what have you done? You've essentially assassinated me.
His dad's God. There you go.
That's what I said earlier.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch on. I'm sorry. Okay.
Anyway, his dad is like, what have you done? And he's all, you know, any mistake is a sin, and a sin is a sin is a sin. And his dad, he doesn't even address it. He's just exasperated, like, you stupid insect.
Yeah.
Because there's no point actually addressing what he's saying, because he won't listen, because he doesn't believe in it.
Yeah.
He won't actually engage with any criticism of his apparent viewpoint, because it's not actually a viewpoint that he even acknowledges. He just uses it. It's completely fake.
He got psychological issues, hasn't he? I think that's why Matt's going off him. Wasn't it you that said first, you know, in the first episode on Kiba, wow, I like this Nago guy. He gets stuff done.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought he was definitely cool. And,
and then like, from your...
Yeah, he did. Should I read a little bit of text that I had written down about this dude?
I'd love to hear a little bit of text.
Okay, because I have, like, a lot, but I don't want to go too far. Because apparently walls of text in audio form aren't good, so whatever.
Well, it all depends on the delivery.
Yeah, as long as
just
we
give
can...
give it life.
As long as we can interrupt you, maybe, then...
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah, that's fine. Okay, I don't know, I guess I'll start off here. This guy wants to expand Blue Sky and be its king. So this is, I'm just attacking him, basically. He wants glory and adulation. I even suspect that him helping Watru's injured arm was a part of his farce he puts on to hold himself above others and lord it over them.
Yes.
That's not kosher, bub. So says the Messiah you silently or supposedly represent with your aesthetics and motifs. He's got little wings on his gun, like angel wings. Yeah. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but he's got that going some. Even Megumi's little gun thing has that. So it's there, definitely, subtly. But authority figures and vigilantes are not above the law. And it was so great to see him get arrested for beating that thief. We can jump into talking about this soon. Nago is acting criminally, and besides that, he is a bully. How dare he knock Megumi down again and again, as well as attack Kengo for playing music.
Oh, that's awkward, that scene, isn't it? That's like the most kind of scene, where he hits Kengo. You're like, oh, this guy is... He's not a nice person. Like, before you're just like, oh, he's irrational and he's cruel to... But, like, Kengo isn't even... He's a stranger.
He's a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
It's really, really... Like you said, it was awkward. Megumi, it just didn't make any sense for him to be doing
you
that.
You can separate Megumi as a rival, almost. He doesn't respect her, but he at least sees her as someone he's beating down all the time for a living. Kengo, he just turns up, and the guy's just trying to express himself artistically, and... Bam, you know?
Yeah, it's not good stuff. Nago has the spirit of a tyrant who holds himself as a standard, himself as the standard of righteousness. His arrogance is disgusting and laughably pathetic, if not for the harmful imposition of his will on the world. So,
did you find yourself laughing at him? Because that's a good... you've used the word laughable there.
Yeah, no, I really did. Like, when he was screaming, I'm Nago, and just, like, different things that he was doing. It's like, you were such an idiot and a fool, and, like... I cannot believe how stupid you are. Like, you can't be... Or it's shocking how you can be this stupid and how much you lack self-awareness, which I know, like, Claire, I'm stealing one of your lines, but... I don't think there is a better way to put it, that he lacks the self-awareness. And he's lying to himself about who he is and what he is and what he wants.
But I think it's great that you laugh at him, because I think that really... I think that will pay off.
Yeah.
If you keep laughing at him, because, like, he does change, and it's interesting. All the characters in Kiva change. That's one of the best things about... Well, okay, not all. All the main characters in Kiva change in some way, and that's one of the best things about it. So if you can, like, take that laugh... Whenever you laugh, notice it and take it seriously, because you may find it going somewhere.
But do you remember in the first Kiva episode how I mentioned that Nago... I find him disturbing because he is willing and able to manipulate social power structures to his benefit.
Yes.
it really comes out in this one. Like, he actually does that. He does try to be, like, to bring it out in the open. Like, to just use it and not be shy about it or anything. He just...
Under the color of whatever authority a bounty hunter has in Japan, he tried to beat this guy to death and then say it was justified because the guy's a criminal, right?
Is
that specifically what you're pointing out?
I wanted Mitch to be Baby Nago so much.
Yeah.
I can see shades of it, but yeah. I don't know where it's gone since then.
All creeping under desks.
No, I forget exactly what I'm referring to. But when it happened, I was like, yeah, I totally said that. You keep that in mind while you're watching, that's a good idea.
Did you pick up as well that he lost a button?
He lost at least
yes.
two.
Yeah.
Well, no, there was the guy, the one he pulled off the guy.
Oh, the one that came off him.
And then he lost his as well. And that's like, hey, but hello.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who the director is. We can't blame this on anyway. But some of the directing in Kiva as well, I love. It might come from the actively trying to be more gothic, more romantic with a capital R. But I love some of the shots in it. I love some of the framing, where they choose to put the characters sometimes, and what they choose to focus on.
Oh, I think I know exactly when it was that I became invested in Nago as a character.
Okay.
I think it might have been when he falls into the muddy puddle.
Oh, the only puddle in like a mile radius.
Yeah, after he fights Bikehead Kiva.
Bikehead.
And loses it.
The glorious CG.
He lands in a muddy puddle and he fails so hard, so completely failing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so satisfying.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
So then once you've seen someone deserve failure that much and then actually get it, and you're like, oh, the story isn't actually going to reward him for being the worst.
Yeah.
Then you start to pay attention. And then as he continues to fail, you start to feel like if he can learn from this, then maybe he'll be worth something.
Well, that's spoilers. there's things I want to say, but hey, I'm going to have to wait. That's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, well, most of my notes have to wait.
Yeah, that's the nature of rewatch, I guess.
That's good, but that's good that going back over it, you can see, I guess, the seeds of everything and where you start to develop.
It's very fulfilling to be able, for me especially, like as, you know, someone who has dabbled in writing, to see, oh, wow, he actually did set that up. That's great, because that's the kind of thing that I would worry about. And like when I get back into writing, that's the kind of thing that's going to drive me nuts. Is I've got to make sure this is perfect now. And then when I get 20 episodes down the line or whatever, 20 chapters, I'm going to go back and check that it's still okay. And in Kiva, it works. So far, it works brilliantly. Kengo, especially. I'm sure we're going to get onto in more detail later. But I was worried because of what I know happens to Kengo. That doesn't sound right. What Kengo goes through. It makes it sound like he gets hit by a bomb. Yeah, because I know the development Kengo goes through later.
Kengo comes back?
What do you mean?
Oh, he's not gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, their friendship.
I do. I felt my heart warming as I was watching their scenes together.
Yeah.
Like, I could really... I was really into it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was... I guess I'm just so used to, like, wizard and guy-level crap that, like...
He's not...
Yeah,
exactly. He's called Shunpei.
Actually, that's a really nice segue into something that I noticed and that Todd was like, you've got to say that.
Okay.
In every scene, there was a particular scene... It's like, I think it's at the beginning of an episode, and it's in the 80s, and Master and Shima and Yuri and Otoya, I think, are in the cafe, and I think Jiro as well. But every person in the scene, everyone visible, has a part to play in the scene. They all carry the dialogue. They all carry the mood. It is a complete group effort. Everyone is involved. There's no one useless. There's no one annoying. There's no one who shouldn't be there. And in other scenes, you only ever see either... like, the core cast interacting with each other and everyone having a part, or there are, like, genuinely not connected people there, like people eating in a restaurant. They don't matter. You will never meet them. If you go about your life, there'll be thousands of people who you see in the background, and they're just background people. And that is such a difference.
It kills me.
From other, like,
it kills me that Shizuka has more lines than Mai. All right,
yeah, Gaim,
straight. That is it. That is
let's just do it. Let's just.
Shizuka, spoilers, is not a massively important character. She's very important at the start to set up Wataru and the struggle he has ahead of him. And she does, you know, keep it going. But if you had to choose a sidekick, it would be Shizuka.
Yeah.
She still says and does more.
Mm.
Indeed, we've seen...
And she interacts with...
We've now seen more of Gaim, technically, than we have of Kiba, right?
We've
seen
yeah.
20 episodes of Gaim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... Mai is set up as a very important character. Shizuka...
She is Kota's rival.
She is Kota's rival, officially. Shizuka has done and said more than Mai has by this
and
point.
And in Gaim, you will have scenes where there are, like, 5 or 8 characters, and 3 of them will be having a conversation. But they all have names, and they're all technically, friends of the people. Like, if we're at Gaim HQ...
There's no Chikas and Rekis here, are there?
Practicing their dancing. Mm. They don't matter, but we know they're real people, and that feels just...
It's weird.
I wouldn't have put it into words if I hadn't have watched Kiba and noticed how exceptionally good...
It's so different.
...the staging and the dialogue balances.
But it's my Malika, because I shouldn't be grateful for this. This is basic,
yeah.
Right? I don't know if Claire, you grew up around Stratford, so you should have seen a lot of plays, Matt. I don't know if you were into the stage, but...
Stratford-upon-Avon, not Stratford-in-London.
Oh, no one's going to think
Stratford-in-London. Well, that's just not true. Everyone thinks it's Stratford-in-London.
Okay. It's a basic, especially for a play, right? And you can easily get this. You can imagine why this is important. That if you have a number of people in a scene... They all get to do something. There's a term, stage business, which refers to, it's a pejorative term for when somebody doesn't have a line and they're mugging and they're trying to get their money's worth out of their role by, like, making, audacious movements that all the peanut gallery can see.
And just a distraction.
It's rubbish. It's not a good thing.
It detracts from the
and
play
so
that's been
when I see Rat dancing in the background and making faces and going, yasha, it's just annoying.
Yeah.
But in Café Mal d'Amour, when the dialogue bounces from character to character, when Jiro and Akira, the master, the barman, they get to have their little fun making friends bit, and then Shima supports them, and he didn't have to do that. They could have just had him in the corner reading his paper. He doesn't even look up. He's just like, nah, or whatever. It's great, but it's the basics, and this should be the standard.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding to see it again.
The stranger couples eating in whichever restaurant, whichever cafe, those are the guys dressed all in black who come on to move the actual staging around.
The Kuroko.
Yeah. That's cool. Their function. They're just there to be scenery, not to be characters. And so they're not distracting. They just support what's going on because they give you more of a feeling of world and more of a feeling of place. And Kengo... Is that in a larger sense? Because he could have just vanished after this. He didn't have to stay, but he does stay. He's there at the end. He's in the last episode.
I'm thinking maybe about the series as a whole.
I cannot believe that.
Why do you think Kengo's gone? What happened to him at the end of the last episode? Because I can't help but think about the whole series. I can't remember what happened at the end of the last one. We rewatched.
Well, because I'm not doing extensive notes.
Okay.
it's a little difficult to recall, but at the last I've seen, like... Wataru saved him from the guy who was trying to eat his passionate heart or whatever, the rhino Fangire. And
bad boy.
Is that him?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
I recognize
that guy.
I'm not like complete. I don't know, but
no.
Claire says it's him.
I think so. Anyway, I always think the people are that guy.
I think it's him.
Yeah.
I think it's him. Anyway, he got saved and like. The friendship, like, they didn't even fully resolve the threat of, like, hey, man, thanks for saving me, you were right. Well, maybe they did touch on that, but, it didn't, I don't know, weigh too heavily on me, but, like...
It's interesting,
I just assumed that he would be gone from this point. I guess because...
Yeah, he's like a two-parter character.
Wataru has developed.
Well, he's actually like a four-parter character.
Yeah, but I mean, he is like the characters you get in two-parters, where they're just there
and
they're gone.
Right, right.
Basically, I can see it from Matt's perspective. Like, oh, Wataru has, he's come out of his shell for the first time. He's got his own voice.
Unlocked.
He's got his own voice. You know, and this one thing I love about Wataru is these stages of development he goes through, where at first he's trying to imitate his dad, then he's convinced that he doesn't have to imitate his dad, and then he has to dare to create his own sound, and he gets inspired by a guy who loves, like, the classic rebellious music genre. Mm. Which, by the way, did you know? Rock is derived from the word rock, which means rocking, and roll is derived from the word roll, which means rolling. That's a key back for you there.
Translation. Mm-hmm.
But,
can I squeeze something in before you
finish? Well, I'm nearly done.
Okay.
But yeah, I can see it from Matt's perspective that, oh well, Wataru has completed this stage of his journey, and he can say goodbye to his helper for this chapter and get a new one. But no, I don't. I think Kengo might even be in the next episode. He definitely sticks around. He's a full-on character.
He's on board now, and he's staying. And he has things to do, and he is...
He has a lot to do, actually. I can't wait for that.
He has a lot of things to do, but he also... His friendship with Wataru is why he is there.
Yeah. From now on.
That's so cool, though, because...
I know, right?
I was not expecting to see that at all, because I've been taught by the...
By Double.
By Double and everything after that, basically, to expect that. Except for in 4Z, where it was explicit... Well, but only the Kamen Rider Club kids stuck around. Everybody else went away and faded into the background.
Pause it there. When they get those characters back for their two-parter, remember, they bring all the good ones
who
survive back.
It's not long-standing.
No, but they still try, and I like it when they try.
But my tiny thing that I want to squeeze in...
Squeeze it.
...was, because you say he gets these helpers.
Yeah.
I thought it was really beautiful that when he is trying to get up the guts to sing... None of them encourage him out loud. They'll just do it in mind, and they let him encourage himself. That's so lovely.
Yeah, that is cool.
That's actual friendship.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you say that the reason Kengo's around is because of his friendship, because you're like, well, really, Wataru needs him. But if you think about it, we saw Kengo with his original band, Ikemens.
I love that name.
Yeah, which, by the way, TVN, I'll join the bandwagon. It doesn't mean handsome guys. That's a rubbish translation. It means studs. All right.
I like hunks.
Beef steaks. Yeah, exactly. they were clearly like...
I like hunks. Quote from Claire.
2014. That's their... that was the classic, teenage band. You know he wasn't really friends with those guys. Maybe he was friends with one of them when he was 10, and the other two are kind of hangers-on, like for all you guys out there that have, tried to form a band in high school or whatever. It's that classic cliche, and they all walked out on him. And so, actually he does need a friend. He needs a friend who maybe doesn't appreciate Rocker, but who will stick around. And Wataru, will stick around, and he does. He tries his best.
But this is Wataru's first opportunity to be the bigger person.
Yeah, sure. And it's maybe they're both first real friends.
It's not super obvious. Like, Kengo's not like, oh, Wataru,
exactly.
I need you. No. They're just... It's reciprocal.
But he invites him to come around and talk about their dreams all night.
I know! I love it.
You know his bandmates never did that with him.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
Yeah.
So precious.
I can't talk about Kengo anymore because I love where his character goes too much. And I don't think Matt would ever guess it in a million years. So.
Well, we didn't.
Oh, hell no. No, again, surprises. Wow. Yeah. When I was complaining about Gaiman, people are like, wait and see. I waited and I saw, and it wasn't, hey, what's that reflection in Mitch's eye? Oh, well, just wait and see. Oh, it was a plaster cast building, and apparently this means something significant. Sorry, guys, it doesn't. Yeah. It means bollocks. That was a massive disappointment for me. Well, it wasn't a disappointment, because I knew it wasn't going to mean anything. I knew there wasn't a silhouette in Mitch's eye. and in the end, I was proven right. It was nothing.
Hold on. You guys have seen. Is there something?
Okay. What? Oh, it's...
Do they show you 20? Cthulhu?
Let me try and say
or
21? It in an objective way.
Wait, I haven't watched episode 21 because...
No, it's not in 21. It's in 20. Anymore.
I know, but he just said 21. Listen. Gosh.
20 or 21, wherever it is. Just because I haven't watched it because I really don't care to.
Episode 20.
Because everybody knows that I have completely gone off guard. So it's not ruining anything for everyone. Everyone could just have a good laugh with me here. Yes, you see what Mitch saw, not the reflection in his eye, because people were going on about towers and Yggdrasil and it looking exactly the same as Zawame. It isn't.
It's just a bunch of shit.
What
ruins.
He saw was some ruins, right? And he was at a distance. He didn't even know what they were. He just saw some ruins, which apparently brought him close to Tilly. Yeah, and Kota. brought them both to tears because they saw some ruins in a forest.
So
I don't know why that would. So, the Kota goes and has a look around with Takatora, and Takatora explains, and this is great, people saying, we learned loads about Yggdrasil and Helheim. No, what we learned was theory that we all could have guessed and probably all did. Takatora says, I don't actually know what it is, but I'm pretty sure, for the purposes of the plot, like, the plot says, the script says, this was a civilization that was killed by Helheim, by being turned into Inves and, you know, killing each other.
Do they not have ruins in Japan?
I know, yeah. Well, Claire did a
Do they not have those?
Claire did a brilliant image set of Kota and Nitch and Takatora reacting to seeing ruins around the world with tears in their eyes. But
so just some ruins that have stuff growing on them should not make people be like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen.
Let me tell you, right, we're watching this series before episode 20, whether subconsciously or consciously, we all know Inves are bad. Helheim is a place that is dangerous.
Helheim is something that occasionally opens and then it starts growing on everything.
What does episode 20 tell us?
It's got people and it ruins you.
What does episode 20 tell us?
That.
Takatora guesses that, well, no, he doesn't guess. He describes it as an invasive species, which, like, we know. He's just put it in slightly different words.
Yeah.
We know that.
We've
it's
seen
not
that.
A surprise. He guesses that it's extraterrestrial, I think, if I recall rightly. Doesn't matter. It's a guess. So what? Of course it's extraterrestrial. It's literally not from Earth. You know? So I don't see why that means anything. But none of these are surprises, and that's my problem. Whereas what happens to Kengo, and a lot of things in Kiba, are genuine surprises. Mm. They're real swerves.
Did you want to say something about Gain?
Yeah. Why not just burn it, then? Like, do they not have... Like, no, seriously.
They're made of plaster of Paris, for goodness sake.
They're plants. Like, in the fiction, they're plants, so, like, you know, just light a match and... I'm sure Japan has napalm. Like,
I got into a fascinating discussion on Twitter about, well, now, doesn't this make Takatora seem like less of a bad guy? No.
He's still a horrible social bigot.
Yeah, and he's still the boss. He's described as the overseer. He's the top authority that we've seen in Yggdrasil. He clearly has some sort of authority over Ryoma, though it's shaky at best. That's what he's been described as. Maybe they're more like in competition, maybe they're equal rank or whatever. But he's still allowing them to do these experiments on the plants that are clearly endangering people. The reason these zips are opening, we can only assume, is because they're keeping the tree forced open. Like, in character, in universe, how stupid you have to be to realize that it's your to not realize it's your fault.
Scientists in
they're
fiction never read science fiction.
Yeah, it's obvious to me, and that's the problem with Gaim lately. It's all too obvious.
Mm.
And what I love about
have
Kiba
they sent scouts
is,
further into Helheim? Have they seen if there is, in fact, a living civilization over that ridge?
Yeah, I know. It's just over the way there's a gift shop. what I love about Kiba is that it actually does have layers. I thought Gaim did initially. I really thought they were going somewhere, but it completely fell apart from me. It might repair it, it's fine, but it's too late now because I don't care anymore and I've got better things to do with 20 minutes. Like, talk about Kiba!
Yeah. Wow, okay.
There you go. Of course, that's not necessarily directly relevant to Kiba, but, you know, the concise
when,
version...
While we're watching, we do keep stopping and being like, look at how this compares to the anime, this is so much better.
The concise version is that I think Kiva's twists, Kiva's secrets, are written better than Gaim's, and probably many recent series. By my own admission, I've not seen a lot of post-decade is the right term, stuff. But that's my
I don't think you need to.
No, well, my experience of Gaim, Forze, and Double, basically,
miles better.
Kiva, specifically this idea of swerves, this idea of usurping audience expectations and building fascination. Kiva is a more fascinating world than Gaim.
It's fuller.
It's
more
solid.
Things happen.
Yeah, there's more rules.
More people have more motivations.
Oh, sure. I was just talking about, like, the sort of the science, if you like, the technology, the magic of it. For me, as I said this the last time, why I love Fangire is they have rules. It's much more solid. I know Inves technically have rules, but they're just not as interesting. They're more of a vague sci-fi concept to me.
But it's hard not to hit Gaim, especially when you're, like, comparing it with a when you're comparing it with a maligned season, don't people say Kiva sucks?
Yeah, surely.
They do.
They say Inoue suck. Yeah, the worst crime Gaim committed is it disappointed me. You know, I've already brought up this idea of entertainment. Gaim didn't entertain me, right? Now, I'm taking this too seriously, but if you know, I'll put myself in the shoes of someone who wants to turn their brain off and just be entertained in Crotees for 20 minutes. I wasn't entertained.
I was bored.
So, it failed 100%. So of course they have a right to be annoyed.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. And of course, hey, maybe it's just my personal tone, but I think people, especially on the internet, we can misjudge anger as being, like, humorless anger. I'm perfectly willing to laugh at myself over this. Because it's the only thing you can do with something like Gaim, because it has gotten too silly.
Yeah.
For me to take seriously.
Yeah.
And that's
funny, I guess.
I can't take a kid show seriously, but no, it's true. You know.
The people that the universe used to be had concrete sofas.
They did have a concrete sofa. Why would you have a concrete sofa? That ain't
comfortable. I know I keep concentrating on the furnishings of that
you
show.
You can't sit on a concrete sofa.
That is because
sofa.
It's the most interesting part.
Maybe they would turn to stone. See, this is what you have to do with Gaim. You have to come up with theories. That's the crazy thing. Kiba, you don't have to do that. Yeah. In Kiba, you don't have to come up with... You don't have to explain it yourself, because we've done this on Uncommon Cast. When we talk about Gaim, we've had... You know, some of the other guys have been saying to me, well, what if it's this? And I'm like, we shouldn't have to do this. Mm. And I know it's fun for a lot of people to do that, but I think it goes too far. I think it oversteps the boundaries of audience expectations.
Yeah, Kiba leaves a lot unsaid and a lot of potential for itself, but it doesn't leave it, like, out. Mm. The drawers aren't hanging open. Because everything is just revealed when it wants to reveal it. We don't know the story of
I was
why
give an example you go ahead.
Of why Ramon and Ricky are the last of their kind.
Yeah, we don't know how they got in the castle.
Know how,
we don't know how they get in the castle. That's a great example.
That wasn't what I was saying.
But it is a great example.
Yes, it is.
You're welcome.
Thank you. No, we don't know how they became the last of their kind.
No.
We do know how Jiro was the last of his kind. We didn't.
No.
But we weren't like, why haven't they told us why he's the last of his kind? Because, you know, because the rest died, obviously.
And where we've gotten up to.
But now that we've been given something more, like, oh, maybe that's quite interesting. Tell us more.
A good example for Matt, because it's a recent one, is you have now seen a Fangire who has a rook tattooed on the back of their hand. And
I almost have. I stopped just short of that episode.
Really? Wait, you haven't seen... No, in the flashback. You've seen that episode. It's in flashback.
You saw Yuri's mum die, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's in that. You see him. You see him revving his bike, and you see the rook tattoo on the back of his hand.
Oh. Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so, okay, assuming... So, at this point, we've seen that there is a Fangire who has a rook tattoo on the back of his hand. Now, in your mind, subconsciously, you have the choice of just being like... Well, that's a guy who has a certain style and he has a tattoo that, you know, I make assumptions about his character based on that. Or you might think, hey, is there a bishop? Is there a queen? Is there, you know, and it's up to you. But you can't really get anywhere down that route of thinking. You can't, like, make up the characters yourself, apart from maybe thinking, well, what if one of the characters I've already met is one of these things? But, I mean, that's, again, it's fruitless because there's no clues. But in Gaim, it seems to... almost encourage people to look for clues in the narrative, and they almost never find them, from what I've seen. Here's some grapes and a melon next to each other in a fruit bowl.
But people will do it.
Oh, yeah.
The writing
sure
is lazy, and it's a challenge accepted.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the great thing about... That's maybe the best word I can use about Kiba. There's two words. It's not lazy. It cares. I think the writing cares about the show. And yeah, I'm talking about the writing as if it's a being. I've personified it. There you go.
It's an entity.
The writing is
another entity.
And it cares. It wants the show to succeed and it wants it to fascinate its audience.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure how to feel now, realizing that the bat or whatever it was that Jiro destroyed using Ixa for the first time was... the thing that killed Yuri's mom.
Where did you get that from?
Well, because in the episode we're introduced to her mom dying, and then we see her fighting this particular Fangire, and she seems like really upset with it. Although I guess she's pretty serious about all the Fangire in general.
She's
so I kind of jumped to the conclusion.
No, she's just being racist. I think it's an earwig, if I remember rightly. I don't know. Someone correct me on that. I think it's the earwig.
I guess it could be.
No. They're playing the. It's a long play with the.
It's got a pointy. I'm being deliberately misled. Yes.
I think so. I don't know because I didn't interpret it that way.
No, neither did I.
I knew that she was just saying I hate all Fangires.
Maybe I was being racist then. Like, oh, it must be that one. No, I kind of think it goes along with what I mentioned last episode, which is that Inoue, or the writing of this show, kind of subverts the tropes. Like, it should have been, in a Sentai show, it would have been the monster that killed her mother.
Yeah.
Actually, it probably would have been the monster that killed her father. Mm-hmm. And it actually would have been the monster that killed his father.
Isn't it interesting that it's like, it's a, what's the word? It's like matriarchal.
Oh, matriarchal.
Line.
Yeah.
It's like you meet Megumi, and then you're like, my mother. And you're like, oh, she was a hunter too. Yes. Cool. And then Yuri's like, my mother. And she designed hunting weapons. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, you're seriously.
Yeah, she's this awesome scientist lady.
All right, come on. Inoue is a great guy, but I won't go that far. What is, like, okay. I'm a widely read person, and I can't think of anything else that does that. For this audience specifically, for this, like, this idea of this lineage of women so tightly bound together and so promptly introduced within the narrative of the story and so put over by the other characters talking about, like, how important they are. It's crazy. Off the top of your head, it's so hard. It shouldn't be that hard.
Can't do it.
If somebody knows one, tell me, because I'd love to read it. But yeah, I'm exhausted. I can normally come in here and I'm like, oh, this is like this, and this is like this, blah, 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 I'm English. But I'm stuck.
I'm stuck too.
It's great.
Unfortunately.
But that's only two generations.
Yeah, well, Sailor Moon goes forward, though. It's something about the fact that she, like, Megumi has a... Megumi's
oh, no,
introduced
it is three
first,
generations, because there's the, you know...
Oh, don't bring up Chibi Chibi.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay, wow.
But past Serenity.
Yeah.
And her mother.
Oh, yeah, queen, yeah.
Who is a solid badass.
Sure, yeah.
There we go, like, Sailor Moon possibly...
Bring in the Sailor Moon.
...approaches a similar level of generational
but it, of course,
female importance. But other than that, I mean...
It's for girls!
Well,
what I
Sailor
love
Moon is solidly
what I love
progressive,
is that,
I would venture.
Sure.
So.
But what I love is that Kamen Rider is supposed to be this boys' series, and then it has this woman lineage. Like, I can't imagine what effect that would have had on me as a kid. It's fascinating. I like to think that has had a great effect on kids that grew up watching Kiba.
Well, hopefully.
As, like, you know, 8-year-old kids thought, holy crap, you know, women doing things.
It certainly could be worse.
Yeah, all right, the battle cry of Toku analysis.
No, I
worse.
Just, like, I'm not going to...
Oh, I'm not asking you to give it a gold star.
Exactly.
But I find it...
It is certainly an important aspect
yeah, like
of
you said,
the show.
Right? Thank you, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's something.
Nijirin, are you recording right now, by any chance? Okay, do you guys want to try to, like,
sure.
catch him up and discuss something while I'm gone?
What have you seen of Kiba, then? Like, oh, good. Okay, so you're pretty up to... Yeah, is that what we got to? 13-14, wasn't it?
Zoo, goo, magoo, I think.
All right, well done. He hangs around a lot, doesn't he? Yeah, I like that idea when it's a surprise, when you don't... Like I was talking about before about surprises, when you don't expect a monster to come back like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it also... doesn't he interact with the... Oh, wait. Doesn't he interact with a highly ranked Fangire later? Quite a lot. You do! I'm trying to use this idea of the Fangire cropping up again and again. In relation with the fact that they have a solid power structure, and that's what I like about them. And you wonder how much...
We don't even really know they're ranked at this point, so let's not really go there.
Dang it!
Right, I know Kiva's got, like, a good few riders in it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's got one that's used
Well, don't talk about anything that you haven't seen yet, because...
Yeah.
I've only seen, like, looked at some stuff.
Well, that's what we're talking about. Like, if you haven't seen it in the show, don't bring it up. It's, like, the rule for these episodes.
Yeah, I've seen Kiva and Ixa, and I know some other ones show up in the movie.
Okay. Yeah, we can't... I mean, we're not going to bring those up for Matt, because he's trying hard not to
expose himself to any spoilers.
Yeah. That's why no one talk about Fies or Agito.
Well, exactly. We're hopefully not talking about too many other subjects at all.
Like, deep into Agito, I mean, or Fies. We haven't even started those.
Okay. Now, where were we?
I guess you were only talking about Matt's last bullet point, reuse of suits and stretching that yen.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Pez's theory is on this exactly, the idea of reusing suits to save money. No doubt he's actually referencing Ixa, which by this maybe point, Ixa. I think so. I don't. Well, he doesn't know that the spider Fangire is such a constant.
No, but usually he would have been dead when we first thought he was dead, and he's come back already.
I guess so. But I think it's much more evident with Ixa. By this point, it's been used by three people, right? Yeah.
So, did we already discuss the episode with the prawn Fangire?
No, I don't think anyone's mentioned the prawn.
Prawn guy? Yeah.
No. Go on.
Yeah, it's he ran the restaurant?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find it quite interesting. We get some insight into how Fangire's kind of work when we, like in the first part of that episode, when his butler turns into glass shards and puts him in a coffin.
Yeah.
Kind of.
I can't remember how old he says the butler was.
300 years.
Did he die of old age?
He's saved him for 300 years.
Yeah, wow. I think Fangire can last as long as they keep feeding or whatever.
I guess so.
Hmm.
I mean, Ramon is, 127?
105,
in the 80s.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't know that he's living in the 2000s.
Oh, okay, fine. I guess. I count it. He's just safe in the castle. Right. I count it.
How many years of existence?
He's just not allowed to hang out in the human world. But fine, yeah, okay, so he's at least 100 years old. So I assume that, like, I don't know, I assume that vampires can live just as long as mermen.
And werewolves and Frankensteins, I guess?
Yeah, no, I'm not entirely sure how Frankensteins reproduce. I assume they have to build a new one together.
No, I thought I thought the green guy wasn't a merman. I thought he was kind of like a creature from the Black Lagoon type monster.
Well, that's the same thing, isn't it?
Really? No.
I suppose a merman, most people would think of a guy with a fish tail.
I would think of Aquaman.
I think of like the male equivalent of a mermaid.
Like Aquaman,
yeah. I suppose
yeah.
He's definitely explicitly based on the creature, yeah. They're all very, they're all universal monsters, aren't they?
Yeah, universal ones. Which is why does a Gorgon show up?
There's a Medusa in the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. And isn't there
definitely
also like
a universal monster,
like a hemlock?
A what? Oh well, there's a mandrake.
Mandrake. I got my point.
We're not talking about the movie. We're talking about the episodes we've seen.
Sorry.
I think maybe the stretching of yen. I think that could refer to the Fangire coming back more than just once. But also, I don't know if some of the things that would appear to be money-saving are there to be money-saving or just happen to be money-saving and are there because it's good writing, like Shima not having an office.
Right.
He easily could have an office.
He's going to just hire that.
Well, I don't know, because he is, like, we were talking about him earlier, and he is very much a powerful man.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem threatening because we always see him in a cafe. We never see him behind a desk in a physical position.
It'd be wrong if he was in a suit in his big leather chair, wouldn't it? And he's a fitness fanatic, so it really fits that he's still doing it.
We always
and that's
see
where he takes
him
his
somewhere that he's not the ultimate power. Even in the gym, he's trying to hit his goal. He's striving for something.
And his body fat percentile has slightly increased since the 80s, but he's still trying his best, I think.
But I think it's really interesting that you can't really tell whether it is money-saving or whether it is writing.
Well, I wonder if are there examples of this, are there explicit examples of this in other series?
Well, there's the empty office in Capito.
Oh, yeah.
That I mean, they're...
I like that, though. It's a cool
effect.
Yeah,
no, it is. And I didn't think, oh, Money's Saving, the first time I watched it, I just thought, yeah, that's atmospheric, that's cool.
I think
but then someone else mentioned it as Money's Saving, I was like, yeah, maybe it was.
Most of us don't think of budget, do we? But I mean, like, Raising Monster Suits is classic, isn't it? It's like episode 12 or something of the first series where they're just like, okay, let's bring back a load of old ones.
Yeah, they brought back all the previous ones. I've even got, like, little figurines of all of them.
But yeah, I don't think it's cheap. I think that, at least, is for the kids, because they are what's most important. For the kid watching, it's great to see these things come back.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I even accept Money Saving as a criticism.
No.
Because it seems to ignore the point of the show, and which is, well, there's got to be some element of repetition in there.
Well, actually, now that you mention it, it does make me question why they're so... I mean, do they sell toys regularly of every Kaijin?
I don't think so.
Because what was it that made the requirement for such a regular new monsters?
I'm not qualified to talk about the toys, but as far as I know... Ninja Rayon, you got any input on this? I mean, I assume that there's not a toy of every Kaijin.
No, just the first 12 and also Girazames.
I'm talking the whole franchise of Kamen Rider.
Oh, jeez, no, I need a whole room for that.
I'm not saying you should buy them. I just mean, I don't know why, but I can't imagine seeing on a shelf. I can see a Kiva figure, maybe. I can't necessarily see Prawn Fangaya action figure.
So I wonder, if they're not doing it to sell toys, I wonder why they do so regularly make the choice to have a new one often.
Honestly,
you don't need to.
We talk about the toy advert thing. We talk about the toy advert angle. I honestly don't know how it works, because whenever I see a Kamen Rider toy, which is pretty rare, they're always prohibitively expensive. So are they for children? I assume that the roleplay toys are, but I never see like a figure that looks like it's for kids.
That are just for kids just aren't very good, and so
maybe
no one bothers putting them online.
The little vinyl figures that they give away in the Forza quiz.
Well, maybe you can get ones that look like Transformer quality.
Right.
Like High Street Transformer quality.
Sure, sure.
Not that good.
Right.
So you could import it, but would you want to? I don't know.
I think the roleplay toys is what I usually see.
Maybe there are just too many, so no one bothers.
Right, yeah, maybe.
Well, what I've got actually is these like 3-inch figures of each of them, and they're kind of like a static. They don't have too much poseability.
Are they made of vinyl or like just plastic or what? But you don't know if it's
I don't know. Hey, I've got them all up on my shelf. If I could use the video for a second, I could show you.
Well, are they bendy is what's most important. I think we're taking up valuable podcast time.
Sorry.
Bendy?
Sorry. I always want to play show and tell. I don't know why.
Are they bendy, though?
No.
They're not bendy. Okay.
Kind of
Hachiona's
sword is kind of drooping the way it shouldn't, and her antennae are kind of going away they shouldn't.
That to me sounds like something that wasn't really around at the time. That sounds like more of a recent thing. I don't know. But definitely for Kiva, I can't see the toy advert angle with the Fangaya specifically.
Maybe not all of them, maybe some of them.
Maybe. And I don't know if I can... I've got to think about this now. I don't know if I can criticize this saving money idea, because, like, of course you have to set a budget when you're making a show. You have to set a budget when you're making anything and taking it seriously if there's money involved.
Yeah.
It's perfectly understandable. What? That wasn't just a yeah. That was a special kind of yeah.
Well, I don't think you're engaging with my argument properly.
Go on then.
I mean, we talk about how putting in things that need to get sold as toys can derail the story.
Right.
Putting in budget cut requirements may also derail or affect the story. Like, things may happen because, sorry, we can't afford for you to have that set or whatever.
Maybe. I suppose. It just seems, well, you've already said yourself, it seems like they do a good job of recouping by sort of saying, well, if we can't have an office, we'll have a gym, and that's better for the story.
Well, I'm not saying it's a bad thing if it comes out as a good thing. I don't know if it's an actual concern or something that affects things. Like, if the writer thought, okay, I'm not going to have Shima in an office. I'm going to have him in sets that are cheaper, that you can find anywhere that I can reuse for other scenes, so on. Then the credit goes to the writer's creative powers. If he had to, if he had to find a way to fit everything in, then the credit goes to the problem-solving skills. And that's just interesting to think about, as, you know, just in case anyone is trying to live a creative life. Mm-hmm.
Do you know what, though? This just occurred to me when you said about can't afford. I reckon a gym is more expensive to hire out than an office.
You reckon?
Yeah.
They could just do it on the side, though.
You reckon Kiva's one of those?
Maybe.
Bootleg shows in his guerrilla-style filmmaking.
It looks like a hotel gym.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
You could just go there.
Looks like a Toei.
Because there are a lot of scenes in that gym, and they don't take very long. So if you just went one day, like, there aren't many people in this hotel at the moment, let's do it. You probably could get away with it.
Yeah. What I like, and this is kind of going back to your earlier point about Shima being, I painted him as kind of a go-getter. Where is Blue Sky Party's headquarters?
Who knows?
Exactly. I love that. Well, it's effectively the cafe, isn't it?
Wherever Shima is.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? Yeah. You don't see the base, you know? And that, for me, like in the first Kiva episode, I was talking about how they strike me as kind of a smaller grassroots movement, not like a big scary corporation, like Smart Brain or whatever. Like they're like the opposite of that.
It's very underground.
Yeah. And I love that idea that it's just wherever the boss is.
And it does actually make sense.
Sure it does.
That they would actively hide their existence as a corporate entity or whatever.
Mm. Well, especially given what we'll eventually learn.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I wasn't just talking about taxes.
Oh, okay, right. Okay, I didn't know you were teasing. We can get away with a mild tease. Since Percy's absence, and since we have Nejirin on the line, would it be useful to ask about anything? Because it's been such a love-in, how much of a critical person is our Nej? Was there anything in Kiva so far that didn't click for you? That made you go, oh, this sucks?
Not really that level of extreme. That level of extreme right. is reserved for big budget movies made in the country I am from currently.
Oh, the country of Oklahoma.
United States.
That's the one.
The colonies.
It's also big over there. I forget what country is. Does it mean it? Texas is bigger than countries?
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, was there anything that did make you screw up your face slightly?
I don't know. Part of me thinks it's kind of odd that what was Eek's name again? I forget.
Which one? What, Nago?
The main type. Dude.
Nago.
Yeah, him. He's kind of, I don't know, he seems kind of uptight.
We have covered him extensively.
And a bit of a misunderstander when he, killed the frog fangire. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't bothering anyone.
One of the lowest pieces of scum in Kamen Rider.
Yeah, you can listen back.
But he's Claire's favorite character in Kiva.
One of them. Keep saying that's not true.
You talk about him so much.
You know, the frog completely destroyed the frog guy, and that he was all he was doing listening to his Walkman, and he destroyed it and then blew him up.
He's a jerk, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was just minding his own business, and then he goes and blows him up. What happened to innocent until proven guilty?
You want to keep watching, though.
The frog guy was a murderer.
He was.
Well, true, but he was trying to stop.
A nice guy, but a murderer.
You know, it's hard to kind of go against instinct when you are actually made and bred to kill and feed that. Like, it's like asking a dog not to go and chew up break the necks of a chicken.
Yeah, well, fortunately, Kiva will get into that very subject. So, even more than it already has.
Besides, if they don't kill, they don't live, so.
Yeah.
Kind of thing there. It's kind of a balancing act. I mean,
I think I mentioned before how Heisei brings in these suddenly changed it to be, oh, villains are all misunderstood. And there's always got to be some tragic backstory behind the villains, you know?
Are you sure? Because I don't think the Grongi were very sympathetic.
I guess. I mean, they're... the way that, yeah, the Grongi are kind of an exception.
Shocker, kind of tragic.
The way, but the way they talk about Kuga for me makes, like, yeah, and I haven't seen much of Kuga, but the way they talk about him makes it seem like they're scared of him, which is very different to the way, like, you know, the evil organizations of the past were portrayed. In Heisei, it suddenly becomes about being, like, a race. It's not about an organization of people. It's not about people doing their evil job. It's about that you're a certain kind of animal, and this just happens to be your nature. This is, like, your fate. And I think that comes across very strongly with Fine Guys, particularly.
Claire, could you elaborate on the whole Shocker being sympathetic thing?
Well, I said tragic.
Tragic.
Why is that?
Because, well, like Hongo, they are presumably mostly kidnapped humans. Mm.
I know the Mushroom Kaijin was not. He was kidnapped, but he went willingly.
That's a slight contradiction in terms, isn't it?
Well, he was in jail. So he was, he was sprung from jail and taken to the Shocker base, so he went willingly.
And I think that still fits with what Claire's saying, but my point is that the guys in charge are still very much just, this is our gang and we are doing terrorist acts. Whereas, you know, Heisei, suddenly it stops being about random acts of terrorism by an organized group with a headquarters, and it becomes about how do we negotiate living alongside this other species.
Whether sometimes the answer is we don't, and we don't care, I guess.
Pretty much. And I think Kiva does a great job of delving into that more than some other Heisei series I've seen.
Hmm. Well,
Agito was never bothered about living in harmony with the unknown, let's face it.
Okay, still haven't seen any Agito.
Well, at least I'm doing you a favor by calling them unknown like they are in the show, and not lords like they apparently are on
there
the toys.
There you go. You just did it.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Who cares about that? Is that like? Does that count? It's not in the show. Why should it matter?
I don't
acknowledge that.
Yeah, weird, not in the show things. Like Kuga is never called Kamen Rider in the show, except in the theme song.
Sure. Well, you don't have to. It doesn't matter whether he's called Kamen Rider or not. It doesn't matter what unknown are actually called. Like it just. That's such, I don't know, I don't care. It's like Ken in Street Fighter dyes his hair blonde, it's actually naturally brown, all right?
Wow.
He still does a Hadouken the same.
Now I feel like I know him so much better.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, they're called lords on the toys, I guess, something I don't know.
In never a played Street Fighter.
What a twist. Yeah, but I really can't big up the Fangire enough. They're one of my favorite Heisei monsters.
I don't know, mine might be undead.
Yeah, well, that's good to know.
There may not be one.
Hi.
You don't care what I have to say.
I care.
Okay, fine. I just need you to say it.
I've always cared, Todd. I've always cared.
What was that?
Nejirion was telling us how much he loves the spider fan guy's design, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it is a fantastic design.
And the
horrible
character.
Mouth. Not Nejirion's horrible man.
Hey.
The spider's horrible man. Always got to be a spider, hasn't there? But we haven't had a bat yet.
Well, yeah, that's kind of why I assumed that Earwake 1 was a bat.
Oh, right, okay. Oh, come on, they've got to make a bigger deal out of a bat fan guy.
Well,
I guess,
just a little spin-off question. Nejirion, do you think they have to always do a bat and a spider and make a big deal out of them?
Well, I think they're kind of staples, and they should at least have one. They don't have to be a big deal. Like with the undead, the bat wasn't a big deal. He was dealt with pretty quickly.
I don't even think they're a staple. I think they've become kind of a, you know, looking like a nostalgic, oh, this is a thing. But really, if you actually look back, I mean, there was the first two monsters in the first series were a spider and a bat, and that's it. For ages. Like, don't they... The first two monsters of Kuga, then, isn't it, that are a spider and a bat?
Yeah.
The first monster of Skyrider, which was an anniversary reboot show,
actually, the first one for Skyrider was the chameleon, then the spider and bat.
Right. So, you know, it took them a moment to get their heels in before they decided to go with that. But, like, I don't know. It's so arbitrary. It may as well involve the scorpion, whoever is in the
title. Oh, no. Here it is. This is what it is. Okay. Tsukichi Narumi, he deals with a bat and a spider. Therefore, it's like super hardcore.
Of course.
I actually have the spider guy in memory.
He is the coolest writer of all time because we built
him. We did mention Double when we were watching these episodes. Mm.
Did we? Remember? I don't like to mention Double because it just makes me annoyed.
Well, it was the violin auction.
I do.
With the mask.
Oh, yeah, that one scene.
And Jiro wearing his fancy mask being hilarious. And he said, this one scene is way more hard-boiled than all of Double.
Yeah, it was. It understood that quality of... Well, no, okay, the obvious response from Double fans is Double isn't hard-boiled, it's half-boiled. Right? We've been over that. I think a better thing to say is that scene of Kiva touches on the themes of noir. It touches on what it is to be hard-boiled because it's... What I love is that it's an adult scene, effectively, and it's one with a very slick tone that is quickly undermined. But I think there's so much more in Otoya. There's so much more in Otoya interrupting a masked auction wearing a Japanese mask, a Tengu mask, and Yuri just stopping caring about even holding her mask up because she's getting so annoyed that, you know, Shotaro trap falling or whatever, I can't even remember. Mm. Yeah, I think it's terrible. You could probably do it for every series, but I think Kiva does a lot that other writer series do better.
Well,
it does things other writer series do, and it does them better.
There we go.
I should be good at sentences.
Yes.
Well, when you talked about, you said Skull, you kind of reminded me about something you said. I was talking about Skull Man earlier in an email.
Right.
Well, I just wanted to touch on this real quick. Kamen Rider Skull and Skull Man, they are like the farthest things in the world from each other.
Right. Okay.
Like, the reason they probably used Kamen Rider Skull specifically, like, Double, he's based off of the Double Rider, the original Double Riders, Ichigo Nigo, like, aesthetically.
Very, very loosely. Sorry.
Well, okay.
Go ahead, Nidra.
It's an aesthetic thing. And before, what came before the Double Riders is,
Skull Man, I guess.
Well, the Kamen Rider TV show, the original TV show, it was originally going to be a show for Skull Man. But they changed that because Skull Man was considered too dark and too serious and too scary.
Okay.
Which I can kind of understand. The guy goes around murdering people, innocent people.
Well, yeah, but Kamen Rider, the manga, is explicitly anti-Japanese, so I don't know. I'd have to see a source on that story.
As is Skull Man. The guy murders innocent people, though. He perceives them as guilty because they are like at least indirectly or otherwise working for the man that killed his parents.
Well, yeah. I think probably the Skull Man discussion deserves a podcast all of its own.
And the reason they used Kamen Rider Skull, I got off track for a second. The reason they used Kamen Rider Skull is they needed a before the Double Riders, and that was really the only thing you can grasp when going for that. Because since the original,
I think Skull Man warrants an episode of its own, probably.
It does. This is a great manga.
Discussion.
That'll be a while off for me, at least.
You totally read it. It is amazing. Oh, it's really dark.
You immediately put me up.
That's why he's a DC fan.
Matt,
read some of your notes to us.
I don't want to read it with our innocent people right now.
Where does Matt have a happy ending?
Where should we go? Watcher growing up? Or do you want to hear about the crazy wolfman?
Just follow your heart. Just get us back on course.
I kind of want to question you, Claire, because you you said that you love Jiro somehow, but you also said that you really, really like Nago by the end of the show. I'm wondering how you can like Jiro, who's, you know, crazy wolfman last of his kind, Tigger, he's the only one, and he wants to impregnate Yuri with his seed so she can, you know, co-sire or whatever you call that for a female. The female version of siring, his lineage,
Elaine.
Like... Okay. Like, how is that possible? And I get, I don't know, like, he's cool, and I feel very conflicted about him, but, like, what is it? Can you name something just in the scope of these episodes that...
Yes.
Okay, please.
All right, here we go. Twofold reason, basically. First reason... No. Yes. The first reason is we know Yuri has sex with somebody.
Yep.
There are basically two candidates, and if she's going to have sex with someone, I want her to have Jiro because he is better.
In what ways? I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. It's just...
Shall I elaborate?
Please elaborate.
He's better looking.
He is better looking. He's super handsome.
Atoyas is a relatively handsome guy, but let's cut right to the chase here, because otherwise we're bring it up. Jiro's hot.
Super handsome.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
Atoya tries harder.
It's partly the actors. Like, that guy's so charismatic. He's already been in, like, three writer series or whatever. He should be more.
He must love it.
He's one of the best Tokyo
actors.
He looks
like he loves it, and he's so good at it.
Yeah. Can you imagine anyone else playing a werewolf in this show?
That laugh he does. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah. Can you imagine anyone else playing a werewolf? He's like, he's perfect, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, like, with Ramon and Ricky, I will occasionally think to myself, who else could I have seen in the role of a mischievous little merman and a big strong Frankenstein?
Yeah.
But with Jiro, I never think that.
All of my favourite Toku friends on Tumblr are like, yeah, Jiro's a babe. Total babe. Complete, just, yeah, he's the guy.
He's just cool.
He is so cool. He's grown up cool, but he's also, and I know that I'm going back to the whole grew up in Harry Potter fandom thing. Ooh. He's Draco in leather pants.
I hope a lot of others get that reference.
Which basically means that he is a guy who is, in some really obvious ways, totally awful.
Mm.
You would never want to, like, if he tried to romance you, you'd be like, get away from me, freak.
IRL, yeah.
You are a murderer, and you are also weird.
Yeah.
But in other ways, he is for girls.
Now, a lot
he
of
is
people.
Tailored so perfectly to what we're told to want, and also to things that actually we kind of do just want to be able to just enjoy. Like, he is there on a platter. Like, enjoy me.
A lot of people will dismiss that as he is a bad boy, but it's not that simple. That's a gross oversimplification, both of the writing and of all women everywhere. He's a much more self-possessed character than Atoya.
Yeah.
And, like, Matt says... Let's throw the murder thing aside. We've all done a bit of that.
No, the murder thing is important because that's what enables the, like, that's what makes how to put it.
Well,
that's what puts no requirements on the female watcher.
Yeah.
Because he's a murderer. So you don't have to be like, how would I deal with this in real life? Because you wouldn't, because he's a murderer. So he's like a magical werewolf murderer, which means he doesn't exist. So you can just enjoy the parts you want.
But to get to the point about him, how can you like him when all he wants is to use Yuri for breeding? Well, there's two things. I have two reactions to this. First of all, I can't resent Jiro for that perspective.
No way.
Not just because he is a fictional character, but because he's a werewolf. And so I just naturally think, oh, well, he has a different idea of, you know, reproduction, maybe, than we do. He has sniffed out the best mate, and he puts it in those terms. He says, that woman is strong.
Yeah.
That's
he's
pretty
not,
cool.
Like, he's just trying to get laid.
And unfortunately, well, there's an episode.
No.
I know, but let's ignore that because the other two guys in this podcast don't know about this episode that happens later in Ruins Kiva.
And let's not...
Jiro is so nice to Yuri.
Oh my god! You know how last episode I was saying Daddy Fight is the best episode ever because of the bit with Nago? Uh-huh. That is the best episode of Kiva, I think. Because that is the smoothest thing I've seen in my life.
Yeah,
when he pretends to drown and Yuri does her awful diving and he's underwater just like,
That's how I impressed her, because I genuinely couldn't swim and I really was drowning. But Claire dives much better than Yuri does. That dive was rubbish.
And that
really
river is way dirty, so
I gotta write that down.
And then Atoya breaks it up by being like the more human guy. You think, oh, it's like a harrying story. It's like, oh, which one
it
was she for?
Like, that is something that I will bring up later, hopefully.
Sure.
Like, I've been trying to get in touch with Counterbirds, getting there, kind of slowly, but I want her to be there as well to help, because...
Oh, there have to be more girl opinions on this, on how it's, look at all these babes.
But Kiva, like, totally is just, like, babe buffet. Hot men everywhere.
Yeah.
And that is, like, an important aspect of gothic fiction, which I will get into later,
oh,
I promise.
Sure.
But, no, as well as just being super cool and super handsome and super smooth and everything, he's not scary. I mean, he might murder you, but he's not going to murder Yuri. We know that.
He likes
he respects her.
He likes an 80s
idol
group.
Yeah, he's nice to the camp, like, not camp, but, like...
Oh, no, well,
non-masculine?
He's
not, like, a tough guy.
If I may buzz in, I would probably, hey, somebody better qualified than me, buzz in on this as well. Akira, for me, is how... donut shop manager should have been handled.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Okay, Akira is written to be slightly effeminate. He basically talks like a stereotypical gay man would in Tokusatsu.
But a realistic stereotypical gay man.
But my goodness.
Stereotypically realistic or something.
But like compared to characters like Pierre and the donut shop owner, whatever his name is, it's, I didn't even think, oh, he is gay. And
no,
then going back
and just like, so they met, like, at a gay club or something.
You think this human, yeah, you're in my
we just both assumed that the other one would also have assumed that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just being terrible.
I think
hope
we're
it's
terrible.
Not.
I think we are. We ship Shima and Akira. But he definitely is an effeminately written through that.
Like, Jiro does not use, he's super masculine.
But he's
but
nice
he doesn't use it in a bad way.
Yeah.
He doesn't use it to bully or intimidate. He uses it against Otoya, but Otoya is just as bad.
He's meant for that as well.
And even, like, when he's all, and by the way, she also loves me, he does that snap of the teeth by his ear.
Oh, yeah.
Which
great.
Is, you know, some people would follow that up with no homo.
Pretty much.
But he doesn't, because he doesn't care, because he is self-possessed and he knows, like, he's not worried about someone thinking that he's gay or thinking that he's weak or thinking that he's not whatever. He's just completely sure of himself. And he doesn't use that to get in other people's faces. He hasn't bullied Yuri. He doesn't try and pressure. Like, he might be slightly manipulative in that, like, he's all, I need you. But, like, I don't care.
But
I don't
it's
care
true.
If, yeah,
that's
true.
What makes him an interesting character, is that he wants Ixa as well.
Yeah.
He's hesitant at first, but when he sees what it can do, his other motive is to destroy the Fangaea.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's
so,
not lying, but I think he knows what he's doing by saying
sure.
that, because then she cries and clutches his hand, and, like, who wouldn't?
He's getting it all.
But,
what?
His only bad point, really, is that he is a magical werewolf murderer, so, like...
is that all?
Like, who cares? And Otoya is, like, never gonna be the boyfriend that Yuri wants. So... Don't have sex with him. Don't have his babies. If you're going to have someone's babies, have the hot werewolf babies. Like, it's just obvious.
I can imagine Juro settling down more.
Yeah.
I'll give up the murder for you, baby.
Yeah. Because it does, like, for a while, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And if that's not commitment, what is?
Exactly.
Oh, stopping murdering. That's a commitment, huh?
Exactly. It's all he has to change. Otoya's got a lot more work to do before he becomes a respectable member of society.
Interestingly enough, I can't disagree too much with that.
Do you have an opinion on Yuri's situation? Do you think she should go either way or what?
I think she should go with, like, whoever's least likely to be dangerous. I mean, come on.
Which one is that?
Yeah.
Well, well, accidental and intentional danger are two different things, kind of.
But it is an interesting point.
They're both important.
Here's one of the first things I thought about Otoya when he's introduced in the first episode. Jiro, we know, is a murderous werewolf.
Yeah.
Otoya is an unknown quantity.
Yeah, where did he come from?
He is completely unknown. We know, even when he passed out, when that earwig or bat or whatever the heck it was attacked in the parking garage, I don't believe it, and I don't think it's because his actor is bad. I think I'm not supposed to believe it. I think he's lying.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely something going on with Otoya that we have, like, if it turns out that he knows about the, you know, Blue Sky Party, like, he's known about them for a while, and he happens to be infiltrating them along with trying to get to know Yuri, like, I wouldn't be shocked by that at all. Just because... he seems so, like, there's such a, he seems like he's carrying a secret, and...
Totally. But I think it pays to definitely look at it from Yuri's perspective, because think, who do you trust more? Because I personally trust Jiro. The situation Yuri's in, or Toya, is the scary one. If she could trust him, he might be a better bet, because he seems less murderous. He seems doofy, and far too capricious, and devil-may-care, but... He doesn't dress as cool as Jiro, but he does seem more like a human in a way. You know, Jiro is almost too good. He's too magical, and he's very emotional.
That's another reason why Jiro is my favorite, to be honest, because he is vocal without being verbal sometimes. I always like characters who will exclaim, because I also do that, and it makes me feel better. Because he's always, you know, werewolf.
Roaring.
Yeah, really. Like, making weird sounds.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoy that.
Do you know what weird sound I don't like?
What's that?
Nay, nay, nay.
That does wear a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't got any particular hate for Ramon, but I don't think the actor is doing all he can with the role. Let's put it that way.
Talking about looking at it from Yuri's perspective, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to come back to this later, like in a different episode, because I've got a lot of notes. But, a very important thing about Yuri is that, I don't remember if I mentioned this in the last one, if I just said it to you, but she could so easily have just been Otoya's love interest.
Yeah.
And she's not, she's Yuri.
Yep.
Instead of being the girl that Otoya picks up and then maybe she also fancies this other person, she's a girl, a woman, who has these two people courting her.
Yeah,
and that's
she's
her
the
own
core
story.
She's the core character.
Yeah.
Otoya is a satellite for her at this point. We know he's important, but it's Yuri's story, really, in the past. My opinion.
And that's well, it's one of the reasons why I feel welcome.
Yeah.
It's that the early episodes really do make a difference on how well inclined I feel towards the series.
Mm.
In Agito, I felt like I could watch it because there was a boy in rubber swimming trunks in the first episode. And if you're, again, if you're not afraid, if you don't feel you have to say no homo, then you probably don't hate women. So I will watch that series. Yuri is the main character in the 80s, in the first episode. You can see that. So I feel welcome. You probably don't hate women. That they never get to be Kamen Rider is an important aspect, but in the shows that don't start off proving that they don't hate women, they're not the main character
Yuri
there either. So, like, Kiva and Agito and things like that are definitely winning.
Let me get back to that word again that I'm going to take ownership of this word because other people have used it against me and countering as a core principle of Kali. Yuri is one of the most entertaining female characters in Kamen Rider.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the most watchable. The actress does a great job. She runs a gamut of emotions. I was going to say she's given things to do, but that's not how I feel. She gets to do things, and she does them.
Yeah. And she's actually a very unusual character type for a female character.
Yeah.
And she's interesting to look at in terms of female characters in general, in terms of female characters in Kamen Rider, and she's also quite interesting in, to look at through the lens of the female gothic, because that has its own well-established traditions of types of characters. No.
Yeah,
types of character, and she combines them in interesting and new ways, and that makes more interesting that you can look at it in terms of gothic fiction.
Talk about the Dracula Babe Buffet of Lucy Westenra's dating sim.
Oh, you're right.
Which man will she choose? Will it be the hunky Texan with the quick draw? Will it be the well-educated English doctor? I own my own psychiatric ward. You can come look at the freaks whenever you like. Yeah, exactly. It's spot on. She's basically Lucy. Except her fate is a little better.
Yeah. I mean, we know she
Lucy
dies.
Yeah, pretty much.
Lucy, so she's going to go out with Desi Arnaz. Okay.
Who are these names? Dang, this is Nigerian specialty, is referencing things I don't know, and it turns out they're from the 60s.
I love Lucy. Yeah.
Okay. No, Lucy
Westenra. You said you've never had a relationship.
Am I right in assuming
they slept in separate beds, but... Well, that's because it was the 50s, and you couldn't even imply things like that happened.
Am I right in assuming from your pregnant silence that Nejiron and Pez have not read Dracula?
That would be correct.
Dracula, the original novel.
Yeah, not Bram Stoker's.
Well, yeah, Bram Stoker's. He wrote it.
Oh, I'm sorry. See, that's how ignorant I am. I'm sorry. I was confused
well,
by the movie.
I've,
the movie doesn't accurately reflect what the book.
You can't read a movie, guys.
Well, yeah, I've only seen the Bela Lugosi movie, but I have watched, I have read a very old graphic novel on it, but,
Okay, sure. Well, I mean, I don't know, Dracula graphic novel, so I'm going off the novel as we should.
Kind of just an abridged version of the book.
Okay, the idea of the gothic romance, the babe buffet, is absolutely alive and well. Dracula, yeah. At least, as I've said.
Yeah, like the novels I mentioned before, Wuthering Heights, Catherine gets to choose between Heathcliff and what's-his-face who she marries.
Now, so, hang on, some people would say, okay,
Dunair gets to as well.
Let's, because we're bringing in a bit of wider
reading. And it's always,
it's
always, essentially a blonde and a brunette.
Yeah, I was going to say something like that.
And Jiro and Latoya, Jiro does have darker hair, and he's probably...
Okay.
More of the Byronic one, even though he's... I mean, it's debatable, because Kiva does actually subvert and do things with tropes instead of just using them straight.
Well, they both have Byronic elements. Latoya's the funny sort of... He's like a parody almost of it. And
well, parody is a strong tradition in Gothic.
I know it is. Yes, I do. Right. Ryuki gives you... God, I think her name's Shinji and Ren. The crazy thing about Ryuki, and... Nejiran, is Ryuki one of those series I can't spoil for you?
I've only seen the first two episodes.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not a spoiler, because, I'm kind of annoyed about it, but I think a lot of people assume...
Oh, if you have strong feelings about it, it's not a spoiler. Okay.
I think people assume, when they go into it, when they first see Ryuki, she's going to have to choose between the goofy, bright one and the dark, brooding one, in everything ever. Okay, spoilers, she doesn't. There's nothing romantic ever between any of those characters. In fact, I don't remember if there's any romance really in Ryuki at all, apart from the guy and his ex-wife.
That's the absence of romance. The romance has departed. Yeah. What?
It is, yeah, negative romance. I was just thinking, devil's advocate, somebody might say, that's the same thing as in Ryuki, it's actually quite a common thing. I don't know if it is. People send in more comments if it really is a common thing in writing.
Well, usually Kamen Rider stays away from romance.
Yeah, exactly. It's never been as strong as that. So keep it for me again. Romance with a capital R, all those elements of romantic fiction, of classical romantic fiction and gothic fiction. I don't think anything has touched on it, any Kamen Rider has touched on this idea of choosing between the babes, and also here is a load of attractive people of different convenient types that you can choose from.
Yeah.
Kiva has both what you said of this woman protagonist basically having to choose, not having to. She's got the choice, and it's an explicit choice. It's not like in Ryuki. It's probably not like in any other writer theory. We know she's going to have sex with someone. You said, it's probably going to be one of these two guys, and they're clearly both moving in on her, and she's developed feelings for Jiro, we've seen. But what it also has is boys for the viewers who may like boys.
Yeah.
Because I think you might have brought it up I think you might have brought it up when Kengo was introduced. Because you've got then this holy trinity of Wataru, Kengo, and Nago.
Yeah.
And Nago is kind of like the kid's version of Jiro, I guess. I know, I'm oversimplifying.
With Nago, you want to break him.
Yeah.
With Wataru, you want to nurture him. And with Kengo, you just
want to
get down, I guess.
Yeah, you want to party. Kengo, I was going to say, is the equivalent of a Toya. And Wataru is this whole new being. And it's great because that wasn't a thing in the 80s so much, this idea of, the stereotype before, I don't know, the 2000s, of a girl wanting a timid boy. When did that come in? That's mainstream-wise. That's a relatively new thing. So I like that he represents this new generation. And Kengo is different to Otoya, obviously, because he's much more sincere. You can trust him. He also seems kind of stupider. But again, that will appeal to some people watching. And I don't know what it is, but they're positioned much more, for my money, as, which of these ones do you fancy?
Yeah, well, they all have a very particular aesthetic.
Mm.
And they're all, they all have different social roles. It's, they're much more compartmentalized than your average rider boy cast.
Well, a good comparison, I think, is Forza, which has a very centralized group of, you know, high schoolers and, hey, got crushes in high school. But for some reason, I don't see it the same way. I don't see, like, Yuki, Mew, and Tomoko as, like, which of the girls do you like? Because they're all so different.
Yeah.
And they interact in such different ways. And Shun is basically taken.
Well, they do.
And Jake is a goof. But in Kiba, it's, I don't know, there's
a
romantic...
I think it is at least partly an aesthetic thing.
Because okay.
Though people do fetishize school uniforms,
sure.
And they shouldn't, they should burn themselves.
Yeah.
They are...
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. Well, I said they're all different, aren't they? But I suppose I should have said, yeah, they're all the same. That they don't seem like a... it's not like Blind Date. I don't know if America had Blind Date. The show. There was a TV show in the UK in the 90s called Blind Date. Well, basically, the three bachelors. With, like, I don't know what it is. Is there a shot of Wataru, Nago, and Kengo on screen at once? All three of them in shot. Because I'm sure there is. And I'm sure I look at it and I think...
Yeah, well, now you're bringing to the water.
What they're saying is, these three young men are all choosing different paths through life. Maybe it's not... Maybe you don't even have to look at it as a romantic thing. They're all examples of choosing very different paths in life. Whereas in Forza, I just feel more like they're a family. Mm. And they've kind of been thrown into this. Whereas in Kiba, it's more about choices. They've all made the choice to be here. And now you can choose between them which one you agree with or which one you fancy.
Mm.
But yeah, you're right.
Well, the Kamen Rider Club are the Kamen Rider Club, as well as the uniform thing. They are presented as a group, that it's an ensemble cast, even though there is a main character and the rest.
Yeah.
And Kiba does have an ensemble cast of support characters, but they aren't presented as a united front ever.
And it's so full of like disparate interlocking romance and tragedy and melodrama, as has been pointed out in comments on the last episode. I think that really encourages.
And actually, the way that Wataru responds to the men in his life,
yeah,
it is pretty romantic. If it was to go like, and Wataru-san one day is like, Nago-san, I want to date you.
Yeah.
Kengo-san, you kissed me and I liked it. Like, it wouldn't seem like out of nowhere.
Okay.
There's a tenderness between the male characters and like a physical closeness.
Wataru brings that out. Wataru is probably the most approachable rider protagonist ever, and so it's easy to see at least a strong friendship.
Yeah, he like blossoms when they look at him.
Yeah, which
he's
is
like, oh, you want to be my friend? You want to nurture me? I
don't
you.
Want to say it, but that's traditionally in this kind of stuff, that's a very female trait.
Yeah,
where you put it, blossoming when they look at him.
Yeah, when Nago makes that
has Senpai noticed him?
He's practically blushing.
Yeah, exactly. That's when he notices him, and that's when Wataru grows, but it's an artificial growth, and there's a lot more about interpersonal relationships. And I think in, for example, a show like Gaim, which we've ragged on a lot this podcast already, I don't think that Kota and Kaito's relationship bears any analysis.
No.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that.
A dance club together, they don't have very much physical synergy.
They don't. I don't think they mesh. They share hardly any dialogue, in fairness. Hardly anyone in Gaim does. Characters say very little to each other of consequence, whereas I think Kiva really benefits from allowing these characters to drop their facades and do things with each other that you wouldn't expect. And that sounds so stupid. But yeah, having Kengo say, come stay over and we'll talk about our dreams, that's important.
Actually, Draco in Leather Pants does contain... I mean, where it came from, this phrase, was a bunch of long, long fanfiction by one particular author.
Believe it or not, it comes from fanfic.
Yeah. You may know her as published author Cassandra Clare. She would refer to her Draco character, the Draco of the Leather Pants, and her version of Harry Potter as the ambiguously gay duo, which
Thank
was
you.
Kind of gross of her.
Thank you for reminding me, not only that Cassandra Clare exists, but of the phrase ambiguously gay,
I know,
which I can't stand because it doesn't make sense linguistically.
But what she meant was...
Sorry, I know what she meant.
I don't mind
She meant, I'm a jackass who puts gay people in my pocket. Sorry, Bob.
Yeah, she meant that, but she also meant, I don't mind writing male characters who experience physical and emotional intimacy.
Yeah.
And girls, that is very... cathartic.
Oh, it's
girls,
gold dust.
Because
isn't it?
It's not only like exciting and possibly erotic, it's also it makes you feel more secure, because if boys are like that around other boys, then if they are at you, then you don't have to freak out.
It's become an increasingly common thing, and it's probably been like turned into a cliche and not taken seriously in stuff like Twilight in fiction that is popular, with this idea of a man who is troubled by his emotions and wants people to reach out to him. That's very powerful, and it's very important. And I'm not one of these people who just rags on Twilight. I used to be.
I gotta go.
Okay.
All right, then.
Catch you later.
All right.
Good to have you.
Thanks for being here.
Goodbye. Thanks for having me. Thanks for not ignoring me.
No problem. Never would.
All right. Bye.
Okay, bye.
It sounds too simple to say emotionally open, or that thing you said just about this shrinking violet who grows when a girl looks at him, or another boy, whatever. I didn't mean to say whatever. It's very important to be taken seriously. I can see why something like Twilight is so freaking popular, because not only is it rare, not only is it rare for a girl to think, I have some sort of romantic power over men.
Mm.
And yes, MRAs, I did just say it's rare for women to think that. You'd be amazed what you can learn about the female psyche if you actually talk to girls. It's very rare. And like in media, girls are very rarely given this idea that, hey, you know, you actually have as much authority in this relationship as this man does.
And it's a very easy way to show that, by putting a boy in a close relationship with a boy.
Why don't they do it?
If there's no, like...
There's no threat in inverted commas, then, you know?
If you put two boys together in a romantic or homoerotic, or, like, not necessarily they are gay for each other, but just, like, in a technically romantic scene, then you're seeing a boy in the girl's role, technically, like the role that you will, if you are going to be in a romantic relationship with a boy, then you want to see someone in a romantic relationship with a boy who is not demoted by that, or who retains some sort of social power while they are. And putting a boy and a boy together, even if it's platonic,
joked about it, but it is, it's clearly platonic.
Yeah.
But it's still opens up so much.
It shows that someone who blushes
makes it safe.
Denigrated.
Yes, and it makes it safe. It opens up so many, people underestimate this, but within a kid's mind watching this, that does open up so much possibilities for them. It shows them, TV shows can show kids what is safe. I'm not going to say they show them what is right or what is wrong. I'm not an effects model man. But they can warn them of things. And by showing two boys emotionally connected, it's basically not warning you that that's icky.
Yeah.
And it's all the girls watching it, even though it is a boys' show. Girls watch Kamen Rider. And I'm not saying that a girl would imagine herself in either of their positions.
They might.
But just knowing, I'm sure, but just knowing boys do that.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's important.
Yeah. It's also, television is a very good permission giver.
Yeah, I think that's probably the word I was looking for.
Yeah. For example, I don't think it's a coincidence that Steven Universe has come so hot on the feet, hot on the heels of bronies.
Right, yeah.
Because bronies are like, I want to watch this girl thing, so I will make a boy word for it so that it's okay, because people say it's not. Steven Universe says, look at this boy child who idolises these women and these women's things and these feminine things and so on.
Might bring up Shizao again.
Says it's fine. That's something that can happen, that does happen. Yeah. There's nothing innately wrong or weird or anything about that.
Mm. And Kiba, we're putting Kiba over
because people were crying for it.
Watcher isn't going around being like, I'm adopting the feminine side of my identity and taking ownership of it.
No, he's just being a whole person.
Yeah, he's just not or even the writers aren't afraid of showing that.
Yeah, they're not rejecting.
And it ceases to be a gimmick. When you have him doing it with so many different characters, like we said, the way, different ways he interacts with Nago and Kengo, when you, and the way Kengo and Nago interact, it makes it real. It makes it whole, and that's one of the best things about Kiba, is that these characters feel very complete already before they've even been developed. So there's definitely no downside. Although it's funny, I was going to say, I said there's no downside to this showing this more emotional side, this weaker side, if you will.
He did air quotes.
I did. Wataru, I said, is possibly the most approachable writer. And what I meant was, he's fixable, to use a kind of a trite cliche for what ladies like in fiction, blah, blah, blah.
Now you've ruined everything.
Yeah, I know. What the manager of the publishing house tells you that women want to read. But interestingly, you hate Ryotaro.
Yes, I do. He doesn't want to change.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no indication of ambition. That idea you've already said, and you've pissed off so many, like, well, our MRA listeners. That stands, by the way, for male rights activist, and yes, that is a real thing.
No, it's not.
No, it isn't. Sorry, yeah, MRA and misandry, these are myths. You pissed off so many people by basically saying, so many people turned off and thought, oh, girls like bad boys.
Would you be an idiot?
No, I know. Hey, I know. I know that's what not what you were saying, and hopefully most people listening knew that. That's not what you were saying.
You rube.
Because you've already said, like,
girls want hot boys.
Yeah.
Of various types.
Yeah. But what's important...
And sometimes boys who are bad know how to be that.
It's not even bad. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for. It's that idea of ownership. You've said a couple of times, Jiro is sure of himself.
Yeah.
And a lot of men, a lot of stupid men, will think, oh, of course, girls like cocky. Why don't they like me? I'm a nice guy, capital A,
no,
capital G.
No.
Right. It's
not
about
cocky.
That.
He's sure of the good points that he has nurtured and honed.
But sure is such a trigger word for some more insecure men. What it is... He knows. He just
pays
knows.
Attention to himself.
And he pays attention to other people.
Yeah.
He's a whole person.
That is very important.
Ryotaro seems more like ignorant. Wataru, even though he is scared at first of interacting with other people, and he doesn't seem sure or confident with capital letters, he knows what he wants. Mm. It seems unreachable to him, but he does know that much. I think knowing yourself...
And he does try
hey,
to reach people.
Boys out there. Yeah. If you want a tip, it's about knowing yourself.
Yeah.
And it's about being willing to know other people. It's not about thinking you're awesome. It is about knowing what you are, taking ownership of that, apologizing for the bad parts, and acknowledging the good parts and sharing.
And what you are is not sexy. Learn. That is possible.
Learn sexy.
Like, Jiro was probably not born cool.
Right.
He's probably very, very old.
Yeah.
Probably the first time he put on a satin shirt and leather trousers. That's a ridiculous outfit. That's off a romance novel. And people who read romance novels would be like,
oh,
look at this ridiculous cover. It's stupid.
Yeah, when we say Jiro dresses
but,
cooler than a toy, we mean in fiction.
He pulls it off because he's
and then
learned
he's naked.
How. if you want... Because he's got the whole look.
Yeah.
And the whole self-possession. He's got... everything. He's not just put on a hat.
So does Otoya, within his ridiculous confines, being a goofy guy with a secret.
He has the full outfit, he has the mannerisms to back his outfit up, he interacts with people in ways that are reflected in how he looks and how he grooms himself and so on. He's fully aware of his own persona.
Yeah.
And engaged with it.
Yeah. And I think Wataru shows a willingness to engage that Ryotaro maybe doesn't.
You're talking about from Deno. I was confused for a moment.
Yes, I'm afraid I brought him up again.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine, of course. Okay, so my thoughts about Wataru and his growing up and becoming a man, how I kind of summarized his arc, I guess you could say, changes over time. So my first... after watching, 7 through 10... my thoughts were that Wataru is a bit of a vampire in real life. He latches onto Nago and later Oumura to grow and become a stronger person. He even challenges Nago on being so harsh and judgmental about Oumura. That's part of his growing, of course, and the Fengai in general. Wataru's humility opens him up to being gray on matters and weigh things on their own merits as opposed to making sweeping statements against entire populations, which is good, and I believe, Todd, you kind of laid out fairly well how the Fengai are just, like, you're not going to befriend them. They're pretty much evil through and through.
Yeah, well, they're a race as most Heisei monsters. You know, they're an evil species. They're not an evil organization. They're a species of evil. It's just crazy, you know, and should bother me a lot more than it does.
Yeah, but I think probably just, like, the person-to-person things are handled so well that it kind of makes up for the fact that it's evil, you know, insert evil race here. And I guess the rest of the show will bear that out, but, like, getting back to Wataru, my point about him is, like, he just kind of, like, sucks from these people socially. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of, like, a psychic vampire, but he's like, one of these people who's just, like, he doesn't necessarily drain these people, but, like, he will basically make whatever sacrifices he needs to at first to stay around them, especially Nago, because that was unhealthy, in order to be more like them, because he sees them as more worthwhile than he sees himself.
That's so strange to me that Matt brings up the term psychic vampire, because as far as I know, that term was coined by Anton LaVey, the founder of Satanism, so that's really strange and kind of fitting, I guess, with this vampire themed show. But yeah, I think that's definitely something that I know of, that Anton LaVey used that term. Wow. Whole lot of religion in this episode.
Yeah, that's the whole gamut, too.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But, like, his interactions with Oumura, which I almost have to talk about Otoya right now.
Okay.
Otoya and Oumura share this, you know, their love of violin, basically. And it turns out that, of course, you know, Jiro... Wait, hold on, this is Black Rose, or... What is, it's not... Is it called the Black Rose? Is that the... I'm confusing Bloody Rose with Black Diamond or
Bloody
Black Heart.
Rose. The Bloody Rose is the...
It's Otoya's, yeah.
Yeah, and the Black Star is Oumura as well.
The Black Star, that's right. So, they bond over violin-ness, or violins in general, and Otoya's music, or his song that he... Yeah, I guess it would be a song that he plays for Oumura, has this, like, soul-shaking effect that, like, really causes him to rethink his existence and what he's doing. And he's, like, a weird Fengai because he almost... I can't tell if it's because he's been, like, starved of feasting on human life or souls or whatever for all these years, but it seems like the music had such an effect on him that it soothed his aching or, like... Yeah, but, like, the world made him a savage beast, or like, he was, I guess kind of like the concept that Jiro mentioned and that Wataru was fixed on in the beginning of the show. Like, the foul air of, just, like, the atmosphere of being around people was enough to drive him to kill them.
It's a little strange, though, the way you put it. That makes me think he's struggled to suppress his urges. And it seems that by not feeding, he's just kind of become a relatively normal human. And it's a bit close to, well, have you ever tried not being a Fengai?
Right.
Like, that's weird. That's a touchy issue there. I mean, if you just stop feeding on humans, do you stop being bad? I don't think that's what they were going for. I think he's an exceptional case, Oumura. I think it's the, you know, it's the magic of music that feeds him in a way that, you know, life energy previously had.
Right, yeah, and that's why I kind of drew the comparison of starving. Once he didn't have the music anymore, like, he had to... He was completely compelled to attack humans to get the life energy from them. And, like, just another blemish on Nago is he destroys the Walkman and, like, basically pushes him towards destruction just so that he can so he can feel good about having destroyed him. You know, it's just like...
Chalk up another kill.
So petty.
Yeah, it's really awful. But, like, the Oumura thing is so complex, but what is really interesting about him, and I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but it's just so well interwoven. Mm. All these different story threads are just masterfully woven together that they stretch from episode to episode.
He connects with Atoya and Wataru and Nago, doesn't he? Which is quite a feat, and in different ways too. And he has his own little story.
Yeah, which is really interesting. But like I liked his suggestion, or at first when he burned the violin that Shizuka, right? That Shizuka tried to pull out and tell Wataru that no, that's not what you should be doing. And it was all silent. No real words were spoken about, oh, this is what I'm doing. But when Amura looked at the violin, he saw that it was lacking something. And I think, of course, this is never stated, I think he saw that it was lacking heart, or like Wataru's mark.
Personal touch,
exactly. And it was just, he could tell it was just him trying to copy this thing, and he didn't want him to, so he went ahead and burned it too. And then, you know, they have their little their experience and their time together, and it's just really interesting that Amura kind of inspires Wataru to like be his own man when Otoya had like soothed Amura to stop being this destructive individual.
It's a very important part of Wataru's development. It's interesting that a fangaya teaches him how to be a man.
I think when I watched the burning of the violin, I didn't see it so much as Amura saying, yes, this is a subpar violin. I saw that as him acknowledging Wataru's opinion on his own work and validating his striving.
Wataru needed someone to do that.
Yeah.
He wanted someone to do that.
Amura says, okay, Wataru, you have the final say on your output. I'm respecting what you want, and I will help you to achieve it. But, like, in a really weird, over-the-top, destructive way, because he's a fangaya.
If I wasn't happy with something I'd created, and, like, some manner of authority figure said, no, this is that's what I want. I want them to agree with me. You know, even if I was scared, if I wanted to succeed, I'd want them to tell me, you can do better than this. And that's why he's a great mentor character. It's interesting that it comes so hot on the heels of Wataru. When he starts off, obviously wants to live up to his father's legacy, whatever that might be, and be just like him. And along comes this other older man and says, you know, you can actually just be yourself.
Yeah.
It's all part of a perfectly timed arc.
But Amura has very beautiful eyes. He does. They're quite strange. I don't know what
he's
is
an interesting
exactly
looking
about
guy.
They look like they're drawn.
He isn't. Well, they arc upwards very sharply.
They're very definite looking.
At the back, like they have a very sharp upwards angle. But yes, he's got a very piercing.
He covers them up when he goes out to kill.
Piercing gaze, he does.
Which I love. He looks so cool, like so of the time.
But I think it's. Speaks good of Wataru's character development, and it's perfectly timed with his interactions with Kengo. Like, everything's going well for him now. He's developing at such a rate. He's decided to be his own person. He's made a friend. This friend has given him an instrument, for want of a better expression, to express himself and find out who he really is. And then he's like, actually, I've decided what my dream is. Thanks, it's not yours. He stands up to someone for the first time because of Kengo. The first fangai he ever gets mad at is because he destroyed Kengo's dream, or played with Kengo's dream. And, you don't expect Wataru to say, actually, Kengo, I don't want to be in a band with you anymore. Wow,
well, he
that takes a lot.
Does he actually say that?
Yeah, not in so many words.
If someone hadn't watched it and they were listening to what you were saying, they would probably assume that he says this in quite a confrontational way.
No.
He absolutely doesn't. There's no aggression or like active
in
rejection.
In episode 3,
he just asserts himself.
Like a normal baseline person. Like in episode 3, he would have just gone along with Kengo, but he says, actually, rock is your dream. And my dream is this.
I don't think he says that. He doesn't say rock is your dream. He just says, I think, that he just says, like, I don't even remember, but I don't think he actually rejects Kengo.
I missed the rook tattoo on the hand, so I don't know if I'm an authority or not, but I'm pretty sure it went down as he said, something more along the lines of rock is your dream, but the violin dream is mine, or...
Well, the Watcher communicates it through music, doesn't he? He plays the music. Because at first Kengo's like, oh, you can't, well, you want to be rock with me, don't you? All Watcher does, plays the song, the only violin song in the whole series.
Yeah, and then, I'm pretty sure that he's like, and then this Kengo's is just, my father's okay. violin and my dream is to create a violin that great. And Kengo's like, no, your dream is rock.
I think, and he expresses and it solely plays. In a song. And then Kengo understands, and he says, okay, but we're still friends.
Sweet boy.
Yeah. And yes, they do stay friends.
Yeah, that is so awesome to know, because like, I loved seeing their relationship come together, and it's interesting because Wataru is still naive, because he's playing into the Fangire's plan of, you know, bilking these kids and then getting their life energy of pent-up dreams or whatever.
And their cash, like, what a businessman.
Yeah,
what a jerk. Exactly. Yeah, he's a vampire of everything, isn't he?
Yeah.
Blood money. But it's interesting that you say there, he's playing into their hands and their plan of taking life energy. And it sounds like Gaim, like, oh, we have given the children these belts and are tricking them into a thing. But that's what's brilliant about Kiva is it's so simple. Like,
it's not a plan, is it? It's just their nature.
Gaim seems so contrived and almost pretentious by comparison. Oh, this is all part of my sinister scheme, which completely falls apart if you think about it for 5 seconds. No, Kiva doesn't even bear that, because they're monsters that want to eat people. That's their plan. And you can do so much more with a simple idea.
And they all go about it in their own individual ways, which, you know, one is sick, but two is interesting to see how it all plays out. And then there's guys like the spider, who is just transfixed on Megumi now, and, like, he just keeps coming back. And it's interesting because... I mean, once again, Naga was affected by a Fangire. He lets this guy run amok because he gave him information on Kiva. And
yeah, he's underhanded, isn't he?
He's so underhanded. He's the worst. Yes, I'm giving. Maybe this episode should be titled "Naga is the Worst."
You at least don't barter with the enemy. I mean, that's something else, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I can never see.
I'm sure there are episodes of the original series where Hongo will make a deal. No, wait, Amazon. That's a great example. Amazon forms a momentary truce with a monster in one episode. And then, like, it actually kind of follows through. The monster ends up dead, as they often do.
Right.
But Amazon makes a deal with this monster. And it's different, though, because Amazon is such a naive character. And you believe him, and the monster is kind of genuine. You don't necessarily think he's going to stab Amazon in the back. And there's a similar thing going on with Nago and Itoya, I believe his name is. Itoya is like he's almost apologetic when Nago turns on him. He's not like super angry. He's not like, oh, you've welched on our deal, I'm going to kill you. He's kind of scared of Nago. And so it's similar. Yeah. The difference being, you know that if Amazon and the I think it's a Dobson fly, beast man. It's like a long, really long fly. Anyway, I think
he wrote this.
In a way, you get the idea that if the plan had gone ahead, Amazon would have been like, "No, you're going to be good now, right?" Like the mole turned good, and the Dobson fly is like, "No," and Amazon's like, "All right, I'm going to cut you in half then." Whereas with Nago, he just leaves the Spider Fang guy, doesn't he? He's like, okay, I've used you now. Scuttle away. I've got my sights set on something else. He's just blind. He's got his blinkers on. He's just fixated on this one sick thing.
Puts the light as sin. There's a sin thing.
Well, he makes the rules. He's writing the Bible as he goes. Even when Amazon allies with an enemy, he's a hero, and you know that he's going to do it heroically, and somehow he's going to pull it out of the bag. With Nago, he really is a villain at this point, for want of a better word.
Yeah. He really is. And it's interesting that they kind of mirror each other, because Spider is transfixed on Megumi, and Nago just wants to kill Kiva. That's all he wants.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's scary, because he... is supposed to be a good guy. He professes it. He has a belt he transforms, and you would think, based upon all the exterior things that he is good. You know, he's white and shining and all that stuff, but he really is a bad apple.
And Kiva, of course, wears, he looks like a monster explicitly, yeah. But he's good on the inside. Classic yeah. stuff.
Everybody just, go out and hug a god.
It's just, yeah, it's really strong, though. It's really strong. So
was anyone else okay? This is I talked about before about twists and surprises and disappointments. Is anybody annoyed that we don't actually know what Kiva is yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't think I am. I mean, obviously it's rewatch, but I don't think I was at this point.
No, I have no issues.
I trusted that it'll be explained.
Yeah, it's so easy to just accept it. It has to be a legitimate thing, and there have to be reasons why all these things are the way they were. But the fact that it jumps between 86 and 2008, it gives it this... And I think that almost engenders a sense of trust. Like, look, it's going to be okay.
Solid continuity, yeah.
Yeah, we are telling this story, and the stuff from 86 has to lead up to 2008, so you can believe us that we're going to follow through and the dots will be connected. Whereas, you know, with Gaim, like, they could drop every single plot thread.
What an unusual example.
I wouldn't know. Yeah, I know. Or, no, like, it's true. Forza like, dropped plot points, too, and Wizard and Double was... just awful.
I never, like, I'm sure I never felt just awful. I never felt the need to Google what is Kiva, because I thought, well, I know he's, is he a Fangire? I know he's somehow related to Fangire, but he obviously has a different way of unlocking that power. I know that that means something, and I'm sure it's going to be explained. Meanwhile, like, well, you know, years later, Google, what is an energy lock seed? Result zero. Nobody knows. Oh, they're
well,
just Kiva different, that's
relies,
all.
Relies, like, it does sit within and rely upon established conventions.
Yeah, that
which
helps it.
Is a strength. It's not cheating.
No.
Because it uses them. Oh. Everyone's heard of, like, the Daywalker or
I was gonna
the
say,
nice
we,
vampire.
If we're honest, we know exactly what we're
talking
about. Yeah. Right?
Right.
You've seen it before. It's every, you know, everything that aspires to gothic or horror tropes has this character.
Mm. So, like,
actually,
we know that there's
even,
something to pull out of that.
Even Interview with the Vampire, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And you're watching. I don't know. Hopefully, I'm sorry about this, but like, you're watching Kiva. I really hope this doesn't cross the line. And you're thinking, well, which of his parents is the vampire?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, I mean... Yes, you would have to.
Yeah, I don't want to pussyfoot around anymore, but basically, it's obvious that he's a half Fangire. It's obviously he's not... It's
anyone
obviously,
would get that.
Kiva has something to do with unlocking...
It's into culture in
Exactly. He is a Dampir, I believe the classic term is. And you're just wondering, well, okay, is Otoya a Fangire? Who's his mother? We still don't really know. But what's great is that they don't... They'll tell you, and they keep it going. It's a constant mystery. It's not just a, you know, Mai in a white dress with heterochromia mystery.
Wow, that's good.
It's constantly analyzed as the series progresses.
Yeah, you're right, and I don't know, Otoya as a Fangire is something I don't want to think about, because there's supposed to be these monsters, but something did happen, for sure. And either Megumi is half... Wolfen, or...
Oh, I see.
You know, like there's got to be something.
Interesting theory.
Got to be something.
Yeah, there has to be something, and it is just very lovely how it rolls out like this while keeping you in suspense about...
It's
cool, kind of like
it?
A quiet suspense. It's just like there's these little threads, and they're every now and then they get plucked, and you hear this... Oh, here he goes. There are these strings going, and every now and then you get to hear a nice little tune from them, but it isn't all quite coming together, and you're just waiting for the end or for some point for everything to work together into this beautiful, harmonious... Yeah, thing. So I didn't want to say crescendo, but you're right, crescendo. I should have just gone with that.
You're right, and sometimes they'll cut between the two times, and they'll show certain characters paralleling each other, and you think, are they related? And it's this great, like, hanging mystery... It's actually, again, a thing I don't see in fiction a lot. Working out who's related to who It's really fun.
It is fun.
I think it keys into like a basic human emotion of wanting closure on that sort of thing.
And continuity.
Just yeah, and a love of like the concept of family and just wanting to know who is whose mum and who is whose dad and how, you know, all this works out. And I love family trees. Like, I love organizational stuff is like a big passion of mine. I love seeing stuff organized.
It's so just for nice me, to be able to make connections.
Exactly. I want to know who's connected to who and how and when it happened.
Like, say that Jiro was Megumi's dad. Like, wouldn't that be so nice? Wouldn't he be, like, the best dad for her? That would be amazing.
Yeah, probably. Like, he would... I mean, I would imagine that she got a lot of her toughness not just from Yuri, but then also from Jiro, like, encouraging her. Like, yeah, go ahead, kick... You know, that boy's picking on you. Go ahead, kick his ass. It's fine.
But then
you're my daughter, and I know you can.
But then if he's not her dad... than someone else is, so there's a new relationship to think about. But then also, if he's not her dad, then if they did meet, then how would they get on?
You know what's interesting?
It's fun.
The only proof we have that Otoya is Wataru's dad is that picture.
Yeah.
Well, and he lives in his house.
Something to think about, does he? He lives in a house that apparently belonged to him.
It's the same house.
So, yeah, I know. No, I know it's the same house, but like when you say his house, it's like, oh, we inherited it from him.
The house
we don't know
had.
The full story, but we do. Okay, I think you know what I'm getting at. You're being cheeky.
Here's the thing that I can mention from my notes about gothic fiction.
Okay.
And I talked a lot about place, sense of place last time. But I've got a new bit to add. Because place is very important in gothic fiction. It's named after architecture.
Welcome.
Right. Gothic fiction is called gothic fiction because the guy who started it all decorated his house ridiculously.
Yeah. You can go there.
Yeah. It's a tourist attraction. And it has been since he made
Strawberry
it.
Strawberry Hill?
Yes.
Yeah. Go check it out.
But yeah, there's always like the spooky castle or the big old house on the moor.
Well, what was the original, now that you know, now that I've shown it to you?
The Castle of Otranto.
Thank you. Don't kick me out of this, literary man. Yes, what is widely regarded as the original gothic novel, Castle of Otranto.
By Horace Walpole.
Yeah, or Horatio. And it is,
who decorated his
house, as the name suggests, fixated on a castle. It tells you all you need to know. You know the first gothic novel is going to be castle or something, don't you? Come on. Well, in fact, it's shocking that there's no castle in Kiva, apart from the house.
But even like in
Castle Duran.
Oh no, you're right.
Niche stuff.
Man, no. Look, he's right. I look really stupid now because Castle Duran is obviously a castle. I didn't think of it because we hardly like go inside it, so I think of it as an animal, I guess, which is weird.
Yeah, I was going to mention that briefly, but like all, even if it's not a castle, more recent. Really famous, like still famous gothic stuff, like The Phantom of the Opera. Where is that set? In an opera house.
Yeah.
Or Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I dreamt of
Pemberley? Pemberley.
But isn't that part in Prejudice?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, wherever it is that she dreamt of, it's a place.
Yeah.
But the house, Watery's house, is not fancy and it's not gothic. It's not particularly old-fashioned, it doesn't have a lot of history
well,
to it, but it does have tons of history to it, because
characterful.
We see it in both time periods, and it's really different.
Yeah, it's
It feels quite eerie seeing Otoya in that upstairs area full of boxes and dust, and he clearly doesn't use it very much.
That
whereas
something...
Wataru spends so much time there, and like it's all lovely toned and homely.
Yeah, that is interesting. That's an interesting note about Otoya being in there with just boxes. Oh man, now I'm worried.
Did Wataru install the bath? I love that bath.
Oh, the bath. That is another major point on the hot boys scale.
I'm getting to see him in the bath all the time.
Regular nudity.
Sulking in the bath. With Kibatbat doing his shampoo. I love that.
Or sleeping. Alternatively sleeping. Dreaming of Megumi, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I don't know where the bath is in the house.
No, well, that's gothic architecture. You don't have a necessary understanding of shape.
I'm getting a memory.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Otoya does have that bath.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. He's in there after Yuri hits him, and he's like remarking how he could get hit by her all day long.
Well, there's more to come there, and you should look forward to it.
Okay, man. I need to jump back to Otoya because I'm really drawn to him, and it almost upsets
me. You completely changed.
I have completely changed
on Nago and
turned around on everything.
Yeah, well, that's what the show does, I guess. But, like, his... When he was getting the crap beat out of him by Jiro, and they put that weird, like, censoring light on him.
Wasn't it cool that Jiro didn't transform into Wolfen form, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was great.
He was just angry and pissed off.
That's a good example of the directing I was talking about. That weird bit of directing where they have that glaring light.
Yeah.
And that's so, like, to me, because I used to hang out with film students a lot. To me, that seems like the kind of situation where the film student is, like, just going along and sees something cool and is like, let's think of a scene for this. You know? Let's put him in that light so he's vanished. And it makes the audience think, yeah, great, okay. But I think it works.
We hijacked it again. Go on.
Yeah, no, I just, like, him taking that abuse, it feels so much like he embraces punishment, which is really weird.
That's interesting.
But also, like, that he, it felt purposeful. Like, he had a reason for letting Jiro beat him up at that point. And I almost thought, like, oh, this is where he's going to steal the Ixa stuff. He's going to steal the belt and the knuckle. And, like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. But is that when he stole it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, because I thought that, I thought later, oh, no, that's right. Jiro, like, reaches into his pocket, doesn't he? And then what? And then Otoya's like, oh, no, I have it here. Okay, so, yeah, that was purposeful. But, like, I like how committed Otoya is to stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, he's willing to sacrifice his body for the sake of love or whatever. Like, in his pursuit of Yuri, he's willing to take abuse from her, and he's willing to take abuse from other people in order to, I don't know, prove himself to her or make himself sympathetic to her, possibly. Like, his motives are really hard to read, but there's something... it's somewhere between, like, sick and noble about him.
He's Arthurian.
Well, he's the romantic id. He really, like, it's hard, again, considering what we know as rewatchers. But yeah, you're right. Otoya is willing.
He's a high knight.
He is willing to sacrifice anything for beauty, for what he considers good. Not in that Naga way. I don't want to make that sound like he's evil. But just, yeah, basically he lives... for beauty.
He's like a noble knight, which comes out with some negatives as well, because he's really into chivalry, which, as we know,
is bad.
It's pretty sexist.
Mm. He obviously does treat Yuri like something to be conquered and obtained, but beneath that there is a genuine... It's funny, he's a one-woman man.
He's not.
Okay, I think we've taken slightly different readings of Otoya that we can't go into because of stuff that happens later. I see him as possessed of an obsessive personality, and he's currently fixated on Yuri, and that's what he wants, but he's happy with that. That's what he wants. He's not flitting around lots of different desires. He's not a desirous person. He's an obsessive person. He's fixated on this one thing. And if he can't have it, things might get messed up for him. That's how I see him.
I get very annoyed with him.
Oh, yeah, I do as well.
Something interesting about if he can't have it, he had an opportunity to have her, and he walked away from it something wasn't right.
That's very telling, isn't it? Because she wasn't there for the right reason. That's what I mean. He's got that weird knightly honor thing. And that wasn't a chivalrous moment, in my opinion. Any man who describes himself as chivalrous probably would have gone for it, right? What man uses the term chivalry in the 21st century?
But he doesn't use the word chivalry.
I'm using
it about him.
Okay.
And I mean, like, in, like, the high fantasy Arthurian way.
Okay.
I do get really annoyed with him because he's like a dual man. He doesn't hate women, but he is stuck 100% within sexist behavioral templates.
Mm.
He cannot contemplate a woman as anything other than a child or a romantic conquest in the making.
It's weird that we don't hate him, but it's more like...
I respect the parts of him that are respectable, but I don't forgive the parts of him that I don't feel are forgivable.
No, for sure.
Because, I mean, he respects Yuri as a person, and that's why he doesn't... you know, like, go along with her weird...
I don't know if he does. I've got it.
What?
I've got it. Okay. This is great because this both so will sound good to, like, I think Matt will get it, and also he'll get it even more later.
Okay.
He doesn't respect her as a person. He sees her as a song. And when she went out on that date with him and made him go on roller coasters, it was out of tune. That wasn't, that was a cover version. That wasn't the version he's used to. He has fallen in love with the tune
that's
he thinks very
good.
And this is a man who lives for music. That he's always got the violin. Don't forget, he's always got the violin for him. It's obviously something
that's
he's most passionate about. And I won't say any more.
But I also think
that
he does see her as a person.
Okay.
But he has a romantic attachment to songs.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
I think
what I mean.
That he makes a far better friend for her than a romantic interest. Because I don't think that he is actually, like, in love with her.
No.
I think that he thinks that she's a cool person,
but
he doesn't know how to be friends with a woman.
I think his inability to
separate friendship from, like, girl having...
They both want you for
weird
reasons.
...is ruining the relationship that could be a really great friendship.
I think he wants her like a song. He just wants to sort of admire her. In a weird, distant way, like a knight looking at a picture
of eating
something.
If he wasn't so obsessed with romance and loving women and flowers and whatever, then he would be able to have the distance to be like, yeah, she's really cool,
and
I don't want to, like, tell her that I want things that I don't actually want.
Because
she's the kind of person who is very romantically traditional. She's not, like... She doesn't want him to have other girlfriends if he's going to be...
And she starts using feminine words after when she meets Jiro, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, is that accurate? I mean, does she actually start using Japanese
She starts talking more like a typical woman in a TV show.
Okay.
Yeah. She's got quite a masculine mode of speech, as does Megumi. That scene where Shima points out that she sounds like a woman, that is what that's a reference to, and it's true.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was accurate and not just some weird, I don't know, subbing thing or...
No, it's like I said about Akira.
Or, like, contextually.
The words that Akira is given make him sound feminine and, you know, essentially like a typical gay dude character. So, yeah, that's like the first time she's sort of given way a little, I suppose, is the way it's presented. Shown a softer side. But then she has to pat him on the back a little too hard.
Well, I don't know what more to say because, like, I'm just like really, I'm like.
why do you like her toilet? This is what I do. I don't know if you've summed this up to my satisfaction.
I don't know. He's just like there's this intangible. There's this intangible quality about him that I'm just like so charmed by. Like, here's what I think it is. Like, there are nice things about him. But, like, I see room for him to grow, and, like, I want him to be that better man. Like,
he's very principled. He did down that coffee.
Yeah, and he is as generous as Wataru.
Yeah.
He's a good sport.
Which you see with, you know, Omura, but it's weird because then you have the instances where he's, like, taking all these people's money and, like, screwing them over that we saw earlier. And, like, what's
that
related to?
That's how he lives. Well, or... it was how he lived.
Maybe they weren't very good people. I mean, they were willing to admit that.
But he does have a sincere side, and you will see that come out more and more.
Yeah, I guess I'm like, I don't know if I can give you a satisfactory answer on anything else about him right now. But what I can say about the show in general, something that's very strong, is that we learned about these people a little bit in 1-6. We've learned more about them in 7-14 and gotten to know them better.
Yes.
But there is so much more depth to be explored and for everybody. And I can see it happening. I can see the show moving in the direction where we are going to get to go more in depth with all these characters. And it's being done at a masterful pace, I want to say.
I think it's the right pace, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can't wait to see more. I just want to watch more of this show and spend more time with these people to see what they do and how they change and how they go about pursuing their various desires. And, like I want to see Yuri get Ixa. I want to see what happens with her and Jiro. Like, even though I want her to end up with Otoya, and I want to see, like...
Why?
It just, it seems like the natural choice. Maybe because I really like her, and I really like him, and, like, Jiro's okay, but I can't see... Like, there's just something I can't accept about him, and...
I think you'll be on our side by the end of the series. There's a lot to happen.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see. I'm not frustrated at all. Like, no. There's all these things that are just going to have to slowly come.
It's funny. I saw a tweet once that mentioned how, just casually, you know, in that way that assumes everybody knows it as fact, that Kiba doesn't have a plot.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like. It's like with Gaim. Are we watching the same show?
I don't think we were.
Kiva is all plot. Like, it's all story. There's always something happening.
I wonder what they think plot means.
The world is so solidly constructed, and there's always something happening that doesn't... It doesn't give you room to breathe, but it gives you room to think.
Sorry.
Right?
Oh, just because there isn't, like, plastic flying everywhere and, like, fake reveals and false mysteries doesn't mean that there's no plot to it. I'd be curious to know what other thoughts this person has about other things. Because it doesn't seem...
But the characters talk to each other. They give each other new things to do. The dialogue... motivates the plot, it causes new things to happen in the plot, and the plot causes the characters to change their interactions.
They
with
have
one another.
Lives.
Yeah, it's a story. There are loads of Kamen Rider shows where I think it's perfectly valid to criticize the plotting or pacing, especially. But I just can't see Kiva as one of them at all.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic at this point, and I can't see...
Mm.
really complaining about it. Like, this is... I'm having so much fun watching this show.
Yeah.
It's hard to... Like, I really want to quit watching Gaim. Like, I have to be honest, and I hate to keep bashing,
right?
But it's like, I feel like, what's the point of watching Gaim when I can just be watching more Kiva?
Exactly.
You know?
I loved Kota in the first few episodes of Gaim, but I want to relive Wataru's development more than I want to see where Kota goes.
He's not going anywhere.
Well, exactly.
I don't miss it at all. I've already forgotten that it's current.
Ever since Kota found out that Inverse are actually humans and carried on killing them, I've pretty much given up on it.
Yeah, without skipping a beat, I know.
Without even mentioning it, I've pretty much given up on it. But yeah, it's interesting. How does it compare? Because you've more recently than I, maybe, seen, like, a double and O's, and I wonder how... Like, is Kiva... winning you over to a more sort of pre-decade Heisei, man. That was the real stuff.
Oh, are you kidding me? Yeah. Like,
well, because I know you're. I'm not saying you're a Showa snob like me, but your favorite series happens to be a Showa series. So I know you're a bit more old school, and I just wonder if you know maybe you like Kiva better than Gain. I assume you like Kiva better than Wizard.
Yes.
And double.
Yes.
What about O's?
Yeah, I still like it better than O's. Like, this is way more engaging than O's, and it's...
I don't know if you've seen Forze, so I
won't... I have seen Forze, yeah.
Okay.
I also like it better than Forze, but Forze and O's are probably the top two out of the... Well, they're better than double.
I agree, yeah.
And Wizard for sure.
Yeah.
And I think I like Forze more than Gaim even, just because Gaim is, like, totally... Yeah. Like, Forze was interesting... Throughout, there were problems throughout also, some drop plot lines and things like that, but Gaim just feels like no good at all anymore. And
that's
like,
the thing, anymore is the key.
Like, I want nothing to do with it after maybe, like, the, I don't know, 15th episode or so.
Hey, we're nearly up to episode 15 of Kiva. I hope it doesn't suddenly fall off
shift?
For you.
Yeah, it could. Some. But, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay.
It's just, it's really great, and, like, I can see it becoming a favorite besides Black. But, like, I don't know, even Black, like, I have to criticize it because it was of its time and there are flaws. But as that type of show, I think it's really, really solid. And we've talked about the type of show. I almost want the... I like the blend that this has between, like, the Super Showa stuff where it's just like this random guy goes around saving little kids, you know?
Yeah.
And like, there's the whole Spirit of Justice, and like, there's all these good other aspects of Showa, but like, the characters are fairly flat, but with this, and then like, supposedly Double and On are all supposed to be like really deep characters and everything's complex or whatever.
whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Whatever. Like,
painful.
Like, yeah. Wataru is like so... Like, he is a real person, Megumi's... Everyone in here is so real, and I want to get to know them, like...
I think it wouldn't do to not mention that the acting is pretty top-notch.
Oh, yeah.
Ramon aside, I'm sorry, I give this kid hell, but I think
he'll be fine with a role he was more comfortable with.
Yeah, it's one of...
It's like a more extreme version of the, is Philip feeling okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, man, don't even compare it. The acting in Double is like one of my biggest problems with it. But like every episode I watched, it just looked like theatre students practicing. you know, they knew.
Funny, because it's true.
They know they're on TV, and that's not entertaining. I'll use the word again. I'm taking it away from you. It's not entertaining to watch people know they're in a TV show. But Kiva. Wataru has so much conviction, and as I said about Yuri, runs this gamut of emotion. You see him feeling different things within one episode. You'll see the guy experience at least three emotions, and that doesn't sound like many, but actually it is.
Right.
By comparison. Yeah.
Alright. I gotta go.
Okay.
This has been good. I mean, just it's going to be a huge, long show. And yeah. It's amazing. Should be interesting to listen back to, but this is so good.
Wait till we get to the good episodes.
Wow. That's saying something.
We should probably go and watch an episode of Kiva right now.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncast.rx@gmail.com or contact the Uncommon Crew via Twitter @GomezQ, @Grimhelm, @IllisClay, @CommonatorPez, @Muzog, @ProfessorWare. Keep an eye on @UncommonRx, where one can receive updates, deliver input, and give feedback. Also, visit uncommonrx.tumblr.com for additional content.
Going to say, Matt, please, once and for all, what is your religion called so I stop making an ass of myself?
Okay, basically, I'm...
I knew it would start with basically. That means it's not basic.
Yeah, and then he laughs a little bit. It's going to be... Let's take...
No, basically, I practice Judaism as a Gentile. Which, like...
Wow.
How do you do that? I'm seriously writing this down.
Well, I have come... the pendulum swung one way, and I thought I had to live... Okay. Very much like a Jew, but as far as observance, level of stringency of observance is considered and stuff, like, very much affected, like, outward appearance and things like that, but I've matured and grown and, like, come to a new understanding of that, and basically, like, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of the Jews, is the correct one. And like, sorry, but I'm just going to speak in these concrete terms. And like,
yeah. No, I get it.
Nah, girl.
See, that's the thing. I'm not. like, basically, that. Everything from the Old Testament stands, and like, but at the same time, believe it or not, like Jesus Christ.
I already put my foot in my mouth.
Which is
this one.
You know, who I don't call him. We use his Jewish name or his Hebrew name, which would have been Yeshua.
Okay.
That's what his mother would have called him, and he's the Messiah, not the Christ. I mean, that's Greek. Like we like to kind of go back to the Hebrew roots of everything because we feel like that's authoritative and like has the continuity of, you know, from Sinai to now. Which, if you don't know, Sinai is where the Ten Commandments were given after Israel was pulled, was redeemed from Egypt. Yeah, but a lot of people are ignorant.
I saw that movie. No, I don't know if I mentioned it. Like, I am very interested in religion and what's happened, and I have actually read the Old Testament, so, like, when you say these things, it does come back.
I'm glad to know that. I think it's very important. Like, basically,
I think it's important to educate yourself on all these kind of things, just so you don't, you know, make an ass of yourself like I always seem to.
Oh, definitely, it is important to know the different things. But so, like, when Jesus came, he didn't start Christianity, he wasn't a Christian. In order to be Messiah, even, like, Calvary Chapel, which it's a big non-denominational church here in the West and or in the United States, like they say that like he lived a perfect life and therefore you don't have to. And it's like, well, that's not what that means. Like, in order to be the Messiah, he had to be sinless, which means he always did the right thing. And even when he was tempted to be lazy or mean or, you know, whatever human temptation causing you that would cause you to fall short of the glory of God or of, you know, fulfilling your obligations, he did those things, and he encouraged his own people to do that, and like never changed anything. If he did change something, he would be a false prophet, as defined by the text, the Old Testament. In Deuteronomy, there's a line about like if someone comes and they do miracles, but they say to break Torah or to do something God doesn't want you to do, they're not a false prophet. They're a deceiver who's been given power for whatever reason, possibly to test you, to see if you're actually paying attention to what God says, not just what people do. So, like, a bunch of stuff happened. Death, resurrection, the destruction of the temple, Christianity formed, all that stuff. And we kind of reject the advancements or whatever that Christianity made, where they say like, oh, don't worry, you don't have to, like, Torah's been done away with, it's, you know, not anymore.
So you still would you say Torah rather than like Old
Testament?
Because you use both, like,
yeah, Torah. Okay. Yeah, it's the Torah, it's the Tanakh, it's not the Old Testament. The New Testament thing is from Jeremiah 33, and it's just saying that God's going to put all that stuff that was on tablets of stone and codified back then by a bunch of dudes, like, verbally, it's going to be put on people's hearts, and, like, it will give us the ability to always make the right choice, or basically, like, it'll give a boost to your godliness within you to cause you to, like Jesus did, choose not to sin, choose the right thing to do.
I was told as a child by a relative that the New Testament was basically easy mode, because I didn't know the difference. They said the Old Testament's one with all the good stuff in. Hey, controversy. But no, it is interesting, the sort of the change that took place, you're right. But, like, okay, so I'll say Torah. But, so are you, like, are you from a Jewish family, then, essentially?
No.
No. Because when you say we, what I wonder is, like, do you mean your, like, your family, like, your wife and kids, like, the, is that a decision you've made personally? Or you're a member of a church or synagogue? I don't even know which word to use there, that practices this faith.
Yes. Well, it does, but it's so hard because, like, the Messianic Jewish movement is, like, not a good thing, and it's not powerful, and it's not...
Sounds like a band from the 60s.
It could be.
Like, if it's got a name...
There's a lot of problems with it, and, like, my wife and I were... like hardliners, and we were like, hey guys, let's all be like super orthodox as much as we can be, and we've backed away from that because we weren't doing it to be self-righteous or legalistic or anything like that. It was just like, hey, let's be like fervently faithful to God and live as much this way as we can, because like it is like in the Orthodox Jewish community there are tons of rules and regulations built up around not wanting to mistakenly break commandments because it's so important to, because you love God, try to live as best as you can. Therefore, there were fences built around the Torah so that you wouldn't come close to transgressing it. And we wanted to adopt certain fences in our own practice, whereas most of the people in the Messianic movement are very Christian. And we... started going to this Jewish man's house and like celebrating Shabbat there with prayer services, like lengthy-ish prayer services, and then things happened and he ended up moving, and we along with some friends of ours who believe the same as us kind of started like a home synagogue sort of thing where we went even further and stuff, and we're probably going to start going to this place that is more churchy, and like the leader there says he wants it to be a churchagogue, which to me is anathema. Like, it's awful. Be one or the other. And like, I have a lot of disagreements, but for the sake...
You know what? Okay, you know what word I like? I'm gonna sound like such a goy here, but I love the term temple.
Okay.
I don't know if you're into that, but I've always loved that, because it's such an old-fashioned word, and I love, like, not being embarrassed about it. Saying we're going to temple, I think that kicks ass.
I can see where you're coming from on that. However, I personally don't like the term, because the, like, reform community uses temple, mostly.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
And it's... I think the Orthodox don't like that, because that's, like, confusing... conflating things.
Okay.
It's like, no, this is not the temple. It's
like I said, I'm a one of them.
It's, it's
so
fine. I mean, it's totally understandable. It's kind of a very mysterious thing to break into or find out information about.
You missed it, Claire. I called myself a goyim.
You're actually a singular goy, Todd, and the two of you are
goyim
together.
Plural,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. Like okay. Water, mayim.
Now hang on, is it inherently pejorative? It's not, is it? Like, it is just, is it a more of a... Does it literally mean infidel?
Oh, no, it means Gentile, and a Gentile, pagan would be the negative one. And goy...
I think I would rather have pagan.
I like goy.
Goy is not pagan, necessarily. I mean, I don't think it's held as that term, but I mean, you could say, like, an Orthodox person might say to their kid, like, what, you're living like a goy now? Like that's what you want to be like? And it's just because, like, from the perspective of... an Orthodox Jewish person, the Jewish people are God's special people, his treasured people, and like, they are called to a higher standard of living for a certain purpose, and that's actually to reach the goyim, the nations. Anyway, so should we keep going?
You are reaching us.
I just have one question, and it's like, this is just purely for the peanut gallery. You know, I apologize for the baseness of it. Like, my cousin, it's important to me, and it is important whether she is Sunni or Shiite, right? But for the peanut gallery, she's Muslim. That is like a word that you can use
right.
Easily. Are you Jewish?
No.
Dang. Are you Christian?
No.
No, of course he isn't, because he doesn't believe in Jesus the Christ. Oh my goodness. Is there a word, or should I just not? Should I just say that you have faith?
You can say messianic if you want. Like, I have a friend who says, well, we should be calling ourselves Christians because we're imitating, you know, Christ, the Christ. And it's like, well, yeah, but Christ has so much baggage with it as a term, especially today. It means you're into saying no more circumcision, let's, you know, beat these Jews up and try to make them convert, and all these things. So, like, I don't want to be called by Christ, and I wouldn't think that. Like, I am into the Messiah, like the Son of David, who, you know, walks Torah and lived it out, and you know, is still alive, and will return to like, make everything better.
I'm gonna have to go with this with your faith in.
Okay, no, that's fine. You can do that.
I don't want to call you messianic because it sounds, I don't know, it just sounds.
It sounds like the Illuminati.
No, that's not why I don't want to say it.
I read a lot of novels.
It sounds a bit, I don't know. I know it's, hey, you brought the word up, Matt, but for, I don't know, it feels like devaluing, it feels like you're sort of putting something into words that shouldn't have to be put into words necessarily.
I suppose, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's a difficult thing.
It is
a very difficult thing, unfortunately. And, like, the fact that there's this disharmony because of things that happened in the first and second century, just makes it more difficult because it's continued this way for 1,800 years. We're in a very tough position, but just, I don't know, we just have to roll with it and try to do our best.
Hey, people, you know, it's been hard times, it has.
So now
you're there. For religion, we've been through a lot. Yeah, no, you know, it's important. Let's try and get Vingley back on track. How much of that is he going to edit out? You can leave that in.